In politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that I pooped in my own dog dish. And sometimes I would rather face not eating than face licking it clean and admitting when I'm selfish. And I tell you that I'm suffering from the worst type of loneliness.
This is the Quality News Network. A House panel today approved subpoenas for President Bush's top advisors who were involved in the recent firing of 8 U.S. prosecutors. This decision sets up a potential constitutional showdown between the White House and Congress. Yesterday, President Bush said top aides such as White House advisor Karl Rove and former White House counsel Harriet Myers would be available to talk to the committees privately, however not under oath. The White House insists that Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez acted appropriately in firing the 8 U.S. attorneys. However, some members of Congress say the decision was based on politics. Former Vice President Al Gore appeared before House panels today to discuss global climate change and how to deal with it. He warned of a, quote, true planetary emergency if nothing is done. Gore recommended that Congress impose an immediate freeze on the greenhouse gases that are responsible for global warming. Senate Democrats have come up with a $121.5 billion Iraq War spending bill. It would require President Bush to start bringing the troops back from Iraq and end the combat mission in about a year. President Bush has threatened to veto such legislation. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's office tells CNN that a top aide to radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has been freed from jail. The agreement was reached in hopes that he can play a key role in helping reconcile the factions in Iraq. Across Iraq today, at least 20 people were violently killed. North of Baghdad, U.S. troops reportedly destroyed a bomb-making factory today. 5 insurgents were killed. Iran's supreme leader was defiant today in the face of new U.N. Security Council sanctions against his country for failing to halt its uranium enrichment program. He threatened that Iran would continue to pursue nuclear activities and ignore the international regulations. There are some cracks in the new Palestinian Unity government just days after it was inaugurated. A top security appointment from the Fatah party is upsetting the rival Hamas members. In Mogadishu, fierce battles in the Somali capital have killed 7 people. It is believed that masked Islamic militants dragged the bodies of 2 soldiers through the streets. In Pakistan, tribal fighting has killed more than 100 people. Louisiana's Democratic Governor Kathleen Blanco won't run for re-election. Her popularity fell in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
The Center for Science in the Public Interest, a consumer group known for its past critiques of restaurant food, says that Chinese food is filled with calories, fat, and salt. For example, a plate of battered fried chicken has 1,300 calories and 3,200 milligrams of sodium. That is 40% more sodium and half of the calories recommended daily for the average adult. Millions of flu shots will be destroyed at the end of June because of this year's milder flu season. Though the vaccines are good for several years, the current batches are destroyed so that Americans can get the most up-to-date flu vaccine each year. Oracle reported its third quarter profit was up 35%. The company earned over $1 billion. Investment bank Morgan Stanley reports its first quarter profit was up 70%. Its income in that period was $2.67 billion. The Federal Reserve wrapped up a two-day meeting today. The key interest rate was left unchanged at 5.25%. It's the sixth meeting in a row in which the Fed has decided to leave the rate as is. Light sweet crude is trading at $59.61 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones had a triple-digit gain. The Dow was up 159 points at 12,447. The Nasdaq was up 48 points. The S&P 500 up 24. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Wednesday. I'm a little lost. I'm Bob Kincaid. Nah, I'm not lost. I'm home, baby. Sitting right here back in the remote undisclosed location studios in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. And awfully doggone happy to be here with my lovely wife, talented producer, darling, the phone answerer by my side. Things are the way they should be now. And I should probably, you know, I left Alabama on Saturday, spent Friday doing a lot of packing and organizing. Went halfway on Saturday, came the next half on Sunday, and then because I had two vehicles absolutely chock full loaded with stuff, and see, this is stuff from my father's home. And it's not even the beginning of clearing that place out. It was necessary to spend the last 2 days throwing stuff away. Now, I'm not... it's no big secret. We have an outbuilding. It's one of those manufactured metal buildings. No electricity, no ventilation, no nothing except, you know, keep the rain out and the snow and hopefully the critters. And I kid you not when I say that we have hauled in the last 2 days to dispose of, legally and properly, 2 tons of accumulated stuff. Yes, Lord, yes, 2 tons, 4,000 pounds. And given everything that's going on, I've got another probably 2 tons to go. Because I, you know, this is not the news, this is just life. And I'm just sharing my experience with you. I've learned huge lessons in the last month and a half. We were hauling stuff out, and my young son got upset. You're going to throw away everything, you're going to get rid of everything. I said, son, I'm trying not to do to you what my beloved father and mother have done to me. You can't take it with you. If you haven't looked at it in 5 years, it's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. Get it out of your life. So that's that's what the last 2 days have been. And some of it's been kind of brutal because you'll run across stuff that's sentimental, has sentimental value, and you go, well, if it has sentimental value, then it exists in my memories, and I don't need its physical presence. Goodbye. And it goes away. Because, and you know, a trip to the dump, I'm sorry, the solid waste authority disposal center. Nah, it's a dump. What a dump. Is a real exercise in some things that are really, really wrong with America. Because you pull up with your bags and stuff, and you go, and they got the great big old dumpsters. And you look down in there, and you get kind of a slice of American life. Microwaves, toasters, various and sundry appliances, couches. And you realize how wasteful indeed we are. Clothing made by slave laborers in China and Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. The labor of people who work for 10 cents a day, thrown into a refuse heap because it has a stain on it. And you realize that America has indeed changed. And it has not changed for the better. There are out there, probably you know or have seen, especially folks here in the Appalachians, you've seen those refrigerators that were bought back at the end of the Second World War, and they're still in somebody's basement, and they're running just fine. Because they were built to last damn near forever. Here soon at the mansion. Yeah. Here soon at the mansion, we will be replacing the heat pump, because that sucker went out on us. And I found out by talking to the heat pump guy that the average lifespan on one of those these days is about, for a residential unit, is about 12 years. So that you kick out about $5,000 to $8,000 on your heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system every 12 years. Now, for an average adult, that means you're going to spend over your working life something on the order of $25,000 to $30,000 on HVAC. That is just stunning to me. That we can't build something to last. But of course, you know, we're the culture that invented the idea of getting rid of your car no more than every 5 years. Cars that are still running well, doing just fine. But, you know, it's time to trade it in, time for a new one. And I guess I'm kind of on this thing. No, wait a minute, I'm ahead of myself. I wasn't here Monday and I wasn't here Tuesday, and I kind of forget what this is. After all, this is a Wednesday. And you know what Wednesday
is. Every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight. And, you know, just to keep things in proper perspective, this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. If you're new to the program, I'm Brother Bob Kincaid. Come on down to the altar and confess. Confess not your sins, but your frustrations. Your disgust, your fear, your, pick any word you want. Share it with other people, because odds are, if you're feeling it, several million others are too. It's the miracle of statistics in a massive society like this. But no, I'm sort of on this track about recycling, about wastefulness, because of a couple of things that happened. A very, very old friend of mine, going all the way back to high school down in Alabama, is a wonderful musician. Okay, see, that's why I'm in radio, because I talk so good. A wonderful magician named Steve Trash. And I think his website is stevetrash.com. And his whole mission is to teach people the glories and beauties of recycling and, reduce, reuse, recycle. That's his mantra. And he made his gig by, and he's been all over the world. He's worked Australia, Japan, literally all Europe, whatever. And his whole thing is to teach people by some great comedy and some ordinary household garbage the facts about our consumptive nature. So you can go to stevetrash.com and find out a little bit more about him. And that got me thinking about things. And then today, the last 2 days, looking at the fact that it requires an entire mountain valley in West Virginia to take care of the solid waste of two or three counties, sort of got me thinking. And then today, it turns out that Al Gore, a great man, went to the halls of Congress to try to tell them a little bit about global warming, global climate catastrophe. GCC, global climate catastrophe. That's what it is. That's what we're facing. And there in and bear in mind, Al is a big boy. And he faced up, he went up against an ignorant, benighted, stupid, bought-off, bribe-accepting, filthy shill for the coal industry and heavy extraction and heavy pollution. In other words, a Republican by name, a Congress creep from Texas named Joe Barton. He's the lead Republican on the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And he said things like, global warming science is uneven and evolving. Wait a minute. Oh, wait. No, it's too good. No, a Republican didn't just say something was evolving, did he? Yes, he did. People don't evolve. Monkeys don't evolve. Dogs don't evolve. Nothing evolves. The global warming science evolves. Fool. Mad fool. And they had a testy exchange in which Barton demanded that Al Gore get to the point. And Vice President Gore merely said that he'd like time to answer without being interrupted. Because, you see, that's the way these SOBs operate. They'll sit there and interrupt you time after time and then tell you that you're not getting to the point. Meanwhile, former House Speaker Dennis... Oh, what's Bartok call him? Yeah, the sweaty wrestler, Hastert, said, a lot of those recommendations are more regulations and more taxation. I think we can find answers to use the coal energy, to use the natural gas we have. The coal energy. Well, that one comes a little bit close to home. I've told you a lot, especially those of you outside the state of West Virginia, I've told you a lot in the last years about the practice of mountain range removal that goes on here in the Appalachians, the oldest mountains on God's green earth. And we've talked about the NIMBY factor, the not-in-my-backyard factor. Well, it's in my backyard now. A coal operation has made a determination that it wants to do mountain range removal on the hills surrounding my hometown, the little town I live nearest to. And they want to haul their filthy coal right smack dab through the middle of town on roads that were barely designed to carry anything more recent than the Model T. And that's not sitting real well, but, you know, it's big coal, and big coal in West Virginia. All they got to do is buy off a few politicians. Those are cheap. And we can sit around and wait for the coal trucks to selectively eliminate a few of our kids, our grannies, our grandpas, our uncles, our aunts, and our cousins on narrow roads that were never meant to handle that kind of traffic in the first place. So Dennis Hastert says, I think we can find answers to use the coal energy. Well, Al Gore said it very plainly. We've got to reduce carbon dioxide emissions by 2050, which I think is a little bit optimistic on his part. And he says it will require a ban on any new coal-burning power plants that lack state-of-the-art controls to capture the gases. Well, guess what? Time after time after time during the Bush administration, we have seen, yes, we have seen the permit process going forward to build the same old, rotten, filthy coal-fired power plants with technology from the 1960s, and the Bush administration sitting there with its hand out, getting its palm greased, going, lovely idea, just a lovely idea. Oh, and by the way, in case you're interested, if you should happen to be in West Virginia at the time, you might want to know that my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal, has secured an acceptance of an invitation from the Golden Knights parachute team of the United States Army. And they're going to perform at the Friends of Coal Auto Fair on July 21st, 2007 in Beckley. That's right. The Golden Knights, the United States Army's crack parachute team, is going to be co-opted to be an entertainment for the fiends of coal. Now, I'm not trying to ramble. I think this all does kind of tie together a little bit, because this is very frustrating. I love it here. This is my home. This is where all my family was born. There's 300 years worth of family history in this area. And the fiends of coal are doing everything they can to destroy what is good and decent and beautiful about this place. I've had a lot of conversations with people recently about what's right and what's wrong with West Virginia and the Appalachians. And we come to the same conclusion again and again and again and again. The one thing that is wrong with West Virginia is the dirtiest four-letter word on the planet. Coal. And nothing will change in this state, and nothing will improve, and no one will have any kind of a real future as long as the entire being of this state is directed toward servicing the coal industry and servicing the poisoning of a nation and a globe. Our politicians are bought off left and right by donations to political action committees and by the constant fear-mongering of the coal industry that without coal there won't be any jobs in West Virginia. Well, here's the scary part. With coal, there aren't any jobs in West Virginia. And never will be. Because coal must maintain a death grip upon the workforce of this state. If you don't want to work for coal, you don't have much business in this state. And other people that aren't tied in with coal will not come here. They don't want to be near the filth and the dirt and the grime and the goo. And they don't want to be near broken down school systems. And schools that where the physical structure itself is toxic to the children who attend school there. And so, you know, a polite kiss my ass to Denny Hastert when he says, I think we can find the technology to use the coal that we have. So that's where we begin tonight in the Cathedral of Common Sense. Now, coming up, something entirely different. In the next half hour, we're going to be having a conversation with someone that I have a great deal of regard for. I don't watch a lot of television, but what television I watch, I try to keep up with this guy. Anthony Bourdain, 30-year veteran of the restaurant industry, chef de cuisine, executive chef of Les Halles in New York City. Host of the former A Cook's Tour on Food Network, and now of No Reservations on Discovery Channel, is going to join us in about 5 minutes. And we're going to talk, among other things, about immigration policy. He'll be joining us for a nice long conversation. And like I said, from immigration policy to what to keep an eye out for in a restaurant, if you've never read Kitchen Confidential, his book on the inside of the restaurant industry, and you're at all interested in it. It's more of an autobiography than anything about the restaurant industry. But you will enjoy that immensely. So that's what's coming. We'll talk for about a half an hour. Then in the second hour and the third hour, you know what? It's the hallmark of the Head On Radio Network. Your conversation, your expertise. You welcome in the discussion. So stick around. Anthony Bourdain is on his way in. We'll join him after the break. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say. But I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it. And I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Today, all Americans are feeling the pinch of high energy prices. And this winter, the cost of heating your home could account for nearly half of your energy bill. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, with steps you can take to save money and make your home more energy efficient. First, give your home furnace or heat pump a checkup to ensure it's running as efficiently as possible. Proper insulation in attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, and exterior and basement walls can save 30% on your home energy bill. And insulate the heating ducts, even in unheated areas of your house. Finally, installing a programmable thermostat will ensure you don't pay for energy you aren't using. Program the thermostat down to 65 degrees for 8 hours a day to reduce your heating bill by up to 10%. You have the power to make a difference. You can reduce your home energy bills and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more energy efficiency tips, please visit our website at www.doe.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Welcome back.
I'm healthy as a horse. Ah, but everything is spinning.
29 minutes before the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Wednesday evening prayer meeting edition. As I mentioned going into the break, we are joined by chef, TV personality, and author Anthony Bourdain. I mentioned some of the other books. The one I'm holding in my hand right now, though, is The Nasty Bits. It's a collection of his magazine work. Collected varietal cuts, usable trims, scraps, and bones. Mr. Bourdain, are you there?
Right here, and I have to say I'm thrilled. I mean, I just heard the Dead Boys and Iggy Pop on your show. I'm having a good time already.
Oh, cool, wonderful. Well, we try to use a broad mix of music around here, from alt stuff to punk to post pop, and even a little country here and there. So I'm glad you like it.
Love it.
The thing that put me in contact with you is the article that's collected in the Nasty Bits called Viva Mexico, Viva Ecuador. You know, of course, George Bush just came back from his little Central American vacation not too long back, wherein the Mayan temple priests had to go in and cleanse the evil spirits after he left. And one of their complaints was the treatment the Bush administration has put out there for folks of Hispanic descent, or you know, Indian descent, and the way they're treated in the workplace here. You've got a rather profound experience with immigrant labor, having worked so long in the restaurant industry, and you put forward something in this article that is it's plainly spoken, and you're arguing for a treatment of immigrant labor that is far above anything that we're offering now. And I gotta say, I applaud it. Tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, please, about the presence or the level of immigrant labor inside the restaurant industry.
Well, certainly in New York, it's estimated that between 3% and upwards of 60% of the total restaurant hospitality workforce are Latino immigrants of varying legal status. I think anyone who's worked for any period of time in the restaurant business in New York, or most other major cities for that matter, is fully aware of this as a fact of life. What that means in real world terms, certainly in New York and in my experience, is that a lot of the guys who were hired years ago because they were cheap labor, people who were willing to work dishwashing jobs and porter jobs that others weren't, over time have become the backbone of the business. I mean, in New York, you know, certainly a lot of chefs, myself included, if we're looking at who we're going to promote or to fill a garde-manger or sauté job, a specialist cooking job, more often than not, we're going to promote from within. We're going to look at the guy who's been washing dishes or helping out on prep for a couple of years and has, you know, shown themselves to be, you know, responsible, you know, more often than not, a responsible for others, meaning they're often family men from very early on, sending money back to their families, taking care of people up here. It's long since become not a matter of cheap labor. It's become a character issue, and a lot of people like me, you know, are paying competitive wages, just as much as they would pay for a kid out of a white kid out of culinary school with a greater education or a trained professional background, strictly by virtue of you know, we're looking at a talent pool of grown-ups who we've worked with over time and had nothing but positive experiences with.
And these folks come to work, rain or shine, and you know, because they're supporting a family. What does it do?
Taxes, I should point out. Even the people who are of dubious, you know, with fake green cards, they're paying taxes.
You know, that's something the other side doesn't like to point out. They only say, you know, they take their paycheck and they go to Western Union and they send all their money out of the United States. And but no, there's taxes being paid. There's FICA.
Right.
Yeah, they're paying into this system, and
they're
getting,
not able to take it out on the other end. By the way, more often than not.
Well, right. You know. What does it do to a restaurant? Say, the status of people who might be of questionable so-called legality. What does that do to your ability to get the product out every day?
Well, I'll state it quite simply. If every illegal immigrant, you know, period, across the board, not just the Latino, but let's just say every Latino immigrant with a dubious immigration status suddenly had to leave, or let's say they all called in sick tomorrow to work, the entire restaurant business in the United States would shut down cold. Okay, and it's not. And I have to tell you, when I hear about jobs, American jobs being taken, I'm sure there's some industries where that occurs. But in 25 years in the business, not once have I seen myself or heard any of my friends ever encountering a, you know, middle class kid, or in fact any American citizen walking into their restaurant and saying, I would like a dishwashing job or a prep job or a night cleanup job. I cannot remember ever having an American kid looking for a job coming in and asking me for those jobs. So you know, until that equation changes, I don't you know, I think it's a poor argument to suggest that we start kicking people out or that they're taking jobs. And on the other hand, whatever your position is on this issue, you know, what we want to do about future immigration policy, amnesty, all the rest, you know, let's put that aside for a moment. Let us at least acknowledge who's doing the work now and who's keeping this huge industry afloat now. You know, I think that's at least, if we could be honest about that, that's a good starting point to, you know, really intelligently discuss the issue.
Well, and you've been active through New York Times Television with a cook's tour, and now no reservations. There is in addition to the rest of the so-called growing service sector of American economy, because we don't make TVs or refrigerators anymore. The restaurant industry, through the publicity and the shine that's been put on it by television, that kind of thing, it's growing by leaps and bounds. And
well, certainly it's become a much more glamorous profession with a lot more prestige attached to it. It's become a form of entertainment. It's become an acceptable lifestyle and profession, whereas it really wasn't. It was to be a cook or a chef was seen as sort of a job for transients, fugitives, and losers with no future when I started out in the 70s. That equation has changed, I think, and you know, even on a local basis, you know, chefs are fairly glamorous figures. We have seen something of a glass ceiling for the Latino cooks, who are in fact more often than not, you know, the majority of cooks in the kitchen and doing the actual cooking, while the famous chef is off at the James Beard Awards or you know, on book tour.
And is that something? Is that an attitude that's changing in the United States, or are they going to? Because these guys can do the best of French or God knows Mexican, Spanish, just about any provincial cooking.
Best French cooks in New York are Mexicans, no question. I always say that I always introduce my cooks as coming from the best, you know, the section of France where all the great cooks come from, Puebla. I would much. I find that my French. It's weird in New York. It's the way it's broken down through family connections and sort of the way it's worked out is that the most French restaurants seem to have or have heavy representation of Mexican cooks, whereas Italian restaurants seem to get a lot of Ecuadorians. And in both cases, the Ecuadorians I've worked with at Italian restaurants cook better than the Italian cooks I get from Italy. and the Mexican cooks seem to be a much better bet consistently than the French guys, who are flightier and tend to cheat.
You think Mario Batali would be with would agree with you on there?
I think Mario Batali would absolutely agree with me. I don't know that he has a lot of. I can't. He's a good friend, and I can't think of any Italians working in his kitchen who, you know. Not many, let's put it that way.
Well, and this is part of the American dream, isn't it, Tony? I mean, the whole thing that, you know, if you work hard and you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you start in the mail room and the next thing you know, you're the president of the corporation. That's what's going on when you're starting in the dishwashing area and 15 years later you're a line chef. That's the American dream, isn't it?
That's what I always thought. I mean, I'm a New Yorker. I look at the Statue of Liberty all the time. I mean, wasn't that the whole idea of America?
Yeah, that whole you're tired, you're poor, you're huddled masses yearning to breathe free. But there's a I don't understand this contingent of the United States that one of those huddled masses they've got a real problem with.
And certainly the great, you know, the early the mass emigrations at the turn of the century, that wasn't exactly. I mean, it might have been legal, but you know, it was hardly a controlled emigration. We just threw our doors open. I don't know anybody who's, you know, more than two or three generations, you know, whose families have been here more than two or three generations. So, you know, it offends me, this sort of crazed xenophobia. I mean, I understand if you're getting, you know, illegal, you know, large groups of illegal immigrants committing, you know, felonies, fine. You know, you catch them, you send them back. But it's disingenuous because I think a lot of the people raising this issue know full well that you know, major sectors of American industries, services that we take for granted every day and claim to love, would absolutely cease to function, and those jobs would go unfilled.
Well, it simply blows my mind. There's one particular congressman who is running for president on this issue, and this issue alone, Tony. The guy's a third-generation American.
Yeah.
You know, his grandparents were off the boat from Italy, and he's talking about America for Americans, and it astonishes me. Now, in this essay, this Viva Mexico, Viva Ecuador, at the end, you posit a solution. You say, solution simple. I suggest immediately opening up our borders to unrestricted immigration for all Central and South American countries.
Yeah. Perhaps a little hyperbolic, but you know, obviously that would put a huge tax on our social services. But I mean, I think, you know, what I was stressing is that the quality of work that I've been getting and the quality of person that I've been seeing in the restaurant business has been so consistently great. You know, really good people, good-hearted, good people, responsible for others, a great love of food and culture. You know, I think in many ways they are as a body. Preferable to what I'm seeing rolling out of, you know, a lot of, you know, spoiled kids rolling out of culinary schools who want to work in a restaurant for maybe 6 months or a year until they make enough money to go skiing or, you know, buy the car they always wanted. You know, that's not a dream employee.
And it's still a brutal business back in the kitchen, isn't it?
It is a very, very tough business. And I think the people who seem to be most fiercely living the American dream are often not from America.
What has the television aspect done? And I don't want you to, you know, what has that done? When L.A. Law was on the air, everybody went to law school.
Uh-huh.
Now everybody's going to culinary school, and you know, are you seeing kids come out who think that it's, you know, it's 24 hours a day of moving the fancy spun sugar sculpture 3 feet on the Food Network?
I think there's a lot of people who have actually quit their job, you know, perfectly good jobs as stockbrokers and professionals, and have fallen in love with the romance of cooking, as well as a lot of young kids who go into cooking schools, and they all come out, and a large number of them, once they actually work in the restaurant business, and they see that it's about, you know, doing the same task over and over and over in an extremely hot and closed space, working outrageous hours, very stressful conditions, incredible heat, having to multitask and do 12, 16, 18, 20 things at once, they quickly realize that this is not what they'd imagined, you know, that they're not going to just go to cookie school, roll out, and be Emerald 10 minutes later. You know, Emerald worked hard to get where he is.
Exactly. The people, you know, the people who are doing it, who start a restaurant, who aren't part of a chain. One of the things that I've gotten from watching your programs, and I hope others have as well, is I make a considered effort to stay, you know, to stay away from chains, to go in there where people are busting their hump, you know, really cooking, where, you know, where cooking doesn't mean taking the frozen thing out of the freezer and, you know, throwing it in the fryer.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's healthier. You know, if that's a concern, it's almost always healthier to eat at an individually owned and operated place. But, I mean, isn't it always nicer to, you know, support your local business person? I mean, just in general. And just as a consumer, the best food, I think anyone would agree, is when somebody who actually cares about you or somebody with an identity or something to say, whether it's an ethnic or regional background they're expressing or a personal and unique philosophy, or just, you know, somebody who from the neighborhood who's making regional food, there should be a sense that someone's talking to you when you eat a meal. And when you're eating at one of the major chains, you don't know who's talking. It's an anonymous, voice, if anything.
Well, it seems to me, and I've read just about everything you've put out, it seems to me that the immigrant influence on you has been incredibly profound. In terms of a mindset or whatever, has it also changed your cooking? I mean, do you get a chance to cook much?
No, I would not be. First of all, I don't cook much, but I would not, just because I've traveled all over the world, I've eaten Vietnamese food and Thai food and Japanese food, doesn't mean that I'm so arrogant as to think that I could cook it well. I mean, you know, you go to China where one guy has been cooking, you know, nothing but roast duck, roast goose, and roast pork. You know, he's so much better at it than he will ever be. I just don't think that I could add anything to it. You know, why should you eat my Chinese food when you could, you know, eat the real thing?
Right. I have to ask, as far as the television show is concerned, where are you off to next?
Let's see, Berlin and Tuscany are the next shows. But we've got a whole bunch of them, you know, in the can, ready to roll out in July. We've been to the Tahiti, the Marquesas, Argentina, Brazil. You know, I have a good job.
Yeah, you know, it could be a lot of work. You could be working in a restaurant. But it's such a profound influence that you've had, I'm concerned.
You know, when you see how other people live around the world, and in a lot of ways, you know, you understand where you came from. You understand what basic words like work really mean. You know, when you're the beneficiary of random acts of kindness from people all over the world. I mean, that's a life-altering thing. And when you see places like China and Singapore, you pretty much see what the future is going to be like.
And you see, and it's the future of this nation, too.
There's no question about it. I mean, the Chinese already hold the paper on our country, you know, so...
Yeah, they hiccuped last week, and the Dow lost 400 points.
Yeah, I mean, they're keeping our dollar afloat. They're manufacturing just about everything we make, and they're going to be buying up most of the world's oil. You know, I sort of, you know, there's that Simpsons episode where the newscaster, when they for a moment thinks they're going to be invaded, and he says, "Welcome, future masters." Well, Beijing is Shanghai. And you think, as I used to think, that New York was the center of the world, you realize it isn't going to be for very long. I mean, the money pouring in and out of that country is just mind-blowing.
And so in this country, welcoming people who want to be here and making them part of the process seems like it would be, among other things, common sense from national security or national unity or anything along those lines.
Seems like good sense. It seems like good sense, good business, and good eating.
Well, I have to share something with you really quick, because I was looking through a family history. I've been cleaning out a parent's house lately, and I was looking through a family history, and I found where my grandmother, who was born in 1894, who had recorded, you know, life back then, and I found her this thing where she recipe for souse, and I immediately thought of you because it says thoroughly clean the hog heads, removing the eyes, snout, and ears. Then soak in cold water overnight. Cook the meat off the head and ears until tender. That's eaten.
That is classic. That's about, first of all, that's about as old school, it's about as American as it gets. I mean, somebody cooks you that, that's the whole history of the world in a dish like that. You know, it's delicious, it's respectful of the animal and that you're not wasting, and it's so in keeping with, you know, traditions going back for so long, not just in America, but everywhere in the world.
How do you, you know, based on what you have seen all over the world, how do you get Americans, you know, I'm not in New York, I'm not in Chicago or L.A., I'm in the middle of a holler in West Virginia. How do you take people out here in the flyover country and get them to, it's kind of going back to their roots, if you think about it. This is what their forebears ate, but now it's all hamburgers and macaroni out of a box. How do you change the palate?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think in some ways, you know, what's happened in the city is you're seeing a lot of poor people food being what used to be poor people food, like, you know, pig's ears, pork belly, pigtails, you know, snouts and guts and stuff being sold in fine dining restaurants for $32.95 a plate. You know, there's some real irony in that. Those are status dishes now that chefs really like making, and because chefs are sort of rock stars now, a lot of our clientele are kind of going along with it, you know, falling in love with the romance at least enough to try these things and like them. I guess, it saddens me too, especially with, you know, in an area like West Virginia, that's pretty traditional stuff. And I just came from South Carolina. You know, there's some ambivalence about embracing, you know, a lot of people want to move away from the food of poorer, harder times. You know, they're embarrassed by what their family made. When in fact, I'm saying, you know, if you were facing the electric chair tomorrow, I play this game all the time with chefs. What would the last dish you want to eat be? And it's almost always something mom or grandma made. You know, something from your childhood. You know, maybe you weren't so thrilled with it then, but looking back now, you realize how good that was and how important it was. And, you know, I hope people can embrace those traditional preparations of food. I mean, that was truly, to my mind, good stuff. And good recipes, good ingredients, and it's sad when you see people, especially coming from places with great food cultures like the South, eating at McDonald's and stuffing themselves with the chips.
But some of that does appear to be changing. Morgan Spurlock's work with Supersize Me and all of that. There's a lot of folks out there who you know can't walk into the clown anymore without feeling, you know, just awful.
Well, I think that's appropriate. You should sort of shame and embarrass people, especially when there's, you know, when there's some guy selling, you know, a barbecue down the road, and doing it right. You know, I think it's just better for the world. You give your money to the local guy.
Well, I had my little epiphany while I was down in Alabama not too long back, and sat down to my first bowl of menudo.
Oh, great!
Oh, it was amazing. And and frankly, it was your voice in the back of my head going, "Great big steaming bowl of guts."
Right.
And you know what? It was damn tasty.
And you know, it's the difference between a bad bowl of guts and a good bowl of guts is night and day. I mean, it requires a little skill. Somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, who's not making it well, who doesn't care. I mean, it smells like wet dog. But it can be one of the tastiest things on earth.
Well, there was no wet dog about this. I went into a little Mexican place in Florence, Alabama, and said to the waitress, I said, feed me what you eat at home.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I just had some, what was it called, liver pudding in South Carolina. You know, outstanding, great stuff. And the hash they make from barbecue, you know, it's all of that stuff, all ground up and poured over rice or grits. Outstanding.
And you miss a lot in a very short life if you're not out there letting one of your senses, the taste buds, do a little bit of its own work. And you're doing a wonderful job out there. And you know, I'm obviously just a big fan, and it tickles me to death to have you on the program. I hope you'll continue to put your voice out there in as you did in this essay, and argue for a sane policy for these folks, because they're carrying America on their backs.
Well, I think it's inevitable, because someone sooner or later is going to have to realize that, you know, this is who's keeping us afloat now. Our life would change in ways. I mean, there's a very funny film called A Day Without a Mexican, which I'd recommend your listeners watch. It imagines a situation where every Mexican in Southern California suddenly disappears into thin air, and it's very, very, very funny and all too true.
Well, you've said it, so it will now be sought out. Tony, thank you so very much. Thank you for taking your time and to have this conversation. It's an honor for me. I know you've got a great job, but you're working like crazy. Any other books coming out?
Yeah, I think we're going to have a companion book to No Reservations coming out either later this year, and I'm working on a crime novel.
Oh, that'll be bone in the throat was great.
Thanks so much. It was fun doing this.
Yeah, I had a blast, and take care and travel safely. Eat well.
All right, thanks. Will do.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, so we'll take a break now. It's about 5 minutes before the hour. Well, nah. Nah, let's don't take a break. Let's work up to the top of the hour. I'm guilty. This guy is one of the few people that I will turn on a television if I know he's going to be on there. Because what you see is what you get. And it's the same. It's the same in his writing. He writes for a lot of magazines, among others, Gourmet, some food type magazines. And this particular book, The Nasty Bits, Collected Varietal Cuts, Usable Trim, Scraps and Bones. I read a ton of politics and history and an occasional little bit of religion, philosophy. It's nice to kick back sometimes and read something that isn't that. And while I thought this wasn't going to be that, lo and behold, I find this essay, Viva Mexico, Viva Ecuador. And, you know, it's honest and it's straightforward and it's frankly it would do I didn't name him because I didn't want to get into the personal thing, but it would do Tom Tancredo a world of good to have a conversation with Tony Bourdain. This is the end of the essay. What's the number one complaint from chefs and managers in our industry? I can tell you what I hear in every major city I visit, and I've been visiting a lot of them lately. I'm having a hard time finding good help. Solution? Simple. I suggest immediately opening up our borders to unrestricted immigration for all Central and South American countries. Now, Tony says that's a little over the top. But something reasonable has to... there has to be some sort of reasonable accommodation for these, for the people who are working so hard in this country. He says, if the CIA grads don't want to squat in a cellar prep kitchen for the first couple of years of their career, or are too delicate or high-strung, or too locked into a self-image that precludes real work of kitchens and restaurants, then they should just stand back and watch their competition from south of the border take those jobs away for good. Everyone will end up getting what they deserve. It'll be a wake-up call for the home team cooks and a boon to our industry and the right thing to do. Perhaps the CIA should start a farm team in Mexico or Panama like the Yankee organization, and every Mexican and Ecuadorian line cook in New York should get an immediate raise, amnesty from any immigration charges, a real green card, and the thanks of a grateful nation. And he touched on it a little bit, the fact that most of the people who work, immigrant, non-immigrant, Latino, Anglo, whatever, most of the people who work in the great restaurants could not otherwise afford to eat the food that they prepare. It's a hard business, and this is one of the things that this program cherishes and celebrates is hard work. Because hard work is honorable. And if people are doing hard work in this country, are they not entitled to the honor that they, by God, have earned? Seems to me, somehow or another, that they have. Of course, you know me, I'm a big old nasty liberal. Of course, you are, too. And by that, we mean that you're a decent human being. And it's sad to say, but that does seem to be in rather short supply. Decent human beings, not a lot of them over on the conservative side. And yet, I'm sure Tom Tancredo's kid doesn't want to work for $6 an hour in the cellar prep kitchen. Because when the Tancredos came here 3 generations ago, the whole idea was to raise themselves up and be better, stronger, each generation going by. But these hypocrites, these freaks, have somehow declared that American dream does not apply to some of the people who are working the hardest in this country. Interview's over. Time for our conversation. 877-443-2366. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is America's Liberal Voice.
there's rich folks eating in a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me.
This is the Quality News Network. Subpoenas could be issued at any time for President Bush's top aides, calling them to testify in a controversial firing of 8 federal prosecutors. A House panel today approved but did not issue those subpoenas. The authorization, however, sets up a potential constitutional showdown between the White House and Congress. Just yesterday, President Bush said top aides, including White House advisor Karl Rove and former White House counsel Harriet Myers, would be available to talk to the committees privately, not under oath. President Bush said he wanted to avoid a media spectacle. The White House now says if subpoenas are issued, their offer will be withdrawn. The president is standing by embattled U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and his decision to fire the U.S. attorneys. Former Vice President Al Gore appeared before House panels today to discuss global climate change and how to deal with it. Gore recommended that Congress impose an immediate freeze on greenhouse gas emissions to slow global warming. Senate Democrats have come up with a $121.5 billion Iraq war spending bill. It would require President Bush to start bringing the troops back from Iraq in about a year. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's office tells CNN that a top aide to radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has been freed from jail. He was detained in 2004 and no charges were brought against him. The agreement was reached in hopes that he could play a role in moderating extremism and help reconcile the factions in Iraq. Despite the expanding security crackdown in West Baghdad, at least 33 bodies were found dumped across the city today, all apparent victims of sectarian violence. North of Baghdad, U.S. troops reportedly destroyed a bomb-making factory today. 5 insurgents were killed. Iran's leaders remain defiant today in the face of U.N. Security Council sanctions against the country for its failure to halt uranium enrichment. The country warned that it would pursue its nuclear program and would fight back with, quote, all its capacities if attacked. In Mogadishu, fierce battles in the Somali capital have killed 7 people. 36 were wounded. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up next. Now this.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distant guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Drug maker Pfizer's attempt at making needles a thing of the past for diabetes sufferers hasn't taken off. The company's powdered form of insulin, Exubra, that can be inhaled, isn't selling as expected. Some are concerned about the long-term effects on the lungs and insurance company coverage. The National Cancer Institute has released a study that links a high-fat diet with breast cancer. Scientists say fat may stimulate hormone production, which increases the risk.
And Chinese food is the latest to come under attack by the Center for Science in the Public Interest. The consumer group, known for its past critiques of restaurant food, says that Chinese dishes are filled with too many calories, fat, and salt. The group warns that one plate of battered fried chicken has half the daily recommended calories for an average adult and 40% more sodium. Millions of flu shots will be destroyed in June because of this year's milder flu season. The vaccines are still good for several years, but the current batches are destroyed so that Americans can get the most up-to-date vaccines. And the Federal Reserve wrapped up a two-day meeting today, leaving interest rates right where they are at 5.25%. Light sweet crude is trading at $59.61. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 159 points, the NASDAQ up 48, and the S&P up 24. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
God, it's good to be back in the saddle again. And for those of you who think I was too fawning and starstruck, I apologize, I was. But, you know, I have admiration for people who recognize the value of folks who are out there doing things for the love of it, because one of the things that I have learned over time is that the one way we define ourselves and the one way we give ourselves the best opportunity to succeed within terms that aren't necessarily defined by corporate America is to be happy doing whatever it is we can do that will support our families. I know I talk about him all the time. I'm still going through the process, so forgive me. My dad was a silicon furnace foreman, and he said he had the best job in the world because he loved what he did. And when I told him about us starting up this effort here at the Horn, he said, "Is that what you want to do?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Is it what you love to do?" I said, "Oh yeah." He said, "Then do it. It would be nice if you could succeed at it, but if it's what you love, do it." And so, you know, where my restaurant dollars are concerned, I try to make it a point to go to places where people are really cooking. Because good food does matter. You know, you can treat food as just fuel for the machine, or you can recognize it as a vital part of culture and society, and a glue that bonds a lot of us together. I've talked about my good friends over at the Sedona Grill across the river. I haven't gotten there yet since I've gotten back. But one of the first things Agnes and I looked at each other and said, "We got to go over there," because they are friends, and they care about what they do, and they created this beautiful little restaurant culture. And I found it time and time again. I found it down in Florence. I found a German restaurant. The lady who runs it married her husband, who was an American, while he was in the military stationed in Germany. And now that her kids are all grown, her family was always saying, "You know, Mom, the food's so wonderful, we should open a restaurant." She said, "I don't want to cook for that many people. I'm already cooking for you." And so now that the kids are grown, she decided to open the restaurant. And I sat down and I had the most wonderful bratwursts and sauerbraten and rouladen and the schnitzels. Oh, God. And they're doing it because they love it. And maybe, you know, maybe that's one of the ways that we begin to affect change. If Americans are doing what they love and not what they have to do, it becomes a lot simpler for us to tell the difference between what is real and what is phony. Because we're being just gut stuffed with phony these days. Turn on the television, watch a series of commercial blocks. You'll find out that your teeth are ugly, you stink, you're driving the wrong car, and you need a new drug. And it's all BS. It is all unutterable BS. The news story from QNN at the top of the hour, when the news reader said that the new needleless insulation, or needleless insulin, first day with the rented lips, the new needleless insulin wasn't taking off. Well, they're obviously marketing it to the wrong crowd. They need to market that to diabetic cocaine users, and then let them promote it to the rest of the nation. Okay, I'm being a smartass. Let's go to the phones. Susan's calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, hanging in there. First of all, I'm a Scot, but please don't ask me to eat haggis.
Come on. No. You'd do it. You'd do it for your heritage, wouldn't you?
No.
No?
No. I tried it once.
Well, see, then you did. Okay, you did it.
I tried it. I said, no thanks. Been there, done that. Okay, the reason I called, actually, there's two reasons. When you opened up the show, you were talking about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to read you a very short paragraph from the Seattle Times.
Okay.
In the 1980s, an environmental group bought roughly 900 acres of land and mining claims at the edge of the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument and turned it over to the U.S. Forest Service, quote, to preserve the integrity, unquote, of a nearby river. Okay, that's the paragraph. The BLM has granted permission for Idaho General Mines to come in to apply for a permit to come in and park a 3,000-acre copper mine on that land.
Wow.
This is in the middle of the Gifford Pinchot National Forest. It's some of the most beautiful land on the planet. But when you're talking about a mine that's 3,000 acres in size, you know what they're talking about, don't you?
A giant pit, right?
No.
No?
What's going on in...
They're gonna mountaintop remove Mount St. Helens.
Well, no, Mount St. Helens is part of a national monument. They can't. But they're just outside of it.
Okay.
They're going to take off part of the southern mountain. In the process of ruining it. What really, really scares me? They're about 6 miles from the active volcano.
You know, there's real genius in that.
Yeah, it just blows me away.
But if the volcano gets active, there's not much more to worry about from the mine.
I think so. Considering that this volcano is what's called it's called the Nui Argent, a glowing cloud volcano.
Mm-hmm.
Like the kind that took out Mount Pelee, and you get massive clouds of superheated gas moving at approximately the speed of sound down the side of the mountain. Everything in its path is incinerated.
Yeah, yeah. The pyroclastic flow, is that what it's called?
Yeah. One can always hope.
Well,
we're
at a point, Susan. We're at a point now where I don't think. Or I think many of us have lost our ability to be shocked or disgusted. Not disgusted, but it's not shocking anymore. If it's vile and it's nasty and it's foul, we expect them to try to do it. It's Mount Doom. I mean...
Yeah. I really can't bring myself I could not bring myself to feel sorry for these people if the mountains took them. I really couldn't. And let's face it, if you're letting off that much high explosive next to an active volcano, you're asking for it.
Well, how could you? But of course, just like Congressman Barton from Texas, you know, the science is evolving.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he can come out here and evolve right next to our mountain and let's see if he ends up as a crispy critter.
Well, you know, I think human beings turn into more or less flypaper when they get hit by that, or flash paper when they get hit by that kind of just no more person.
No, actually, it was kind of, well, there was a reason we called them crispy critters. I know it's rude, it's disrespectful, but you know, you can only take so much horror. So if you live in the Pacific Northwest, or if you even care for the environment, please bombard the Pacific Northwest delegations. Scream at them a lot. I have done that quite a bit. But I'm only one voice. You need more than one voice.
Well, that's true. That's why everywhere we've got to learn that unity is the watchword for any of this. None of us as one voice can get any of this done. That's why there was a darn near riot downtown last night over this proposed coal haulage. And as soon as I get a chance, I'm going to try to study up and do what I can to learn from people who have already been down this road to unify people to stop this.
If people Google Gifford Pinchot, it's spelled P-I-N-C-H-O-T, National Forest, and then plus copper mine, it'll pop right up. Real quick, the other thing I wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody at Counterpunch came up with an idea of how to defund the war without getting vetoed. Don't even have to worry about that because you're going to bypass it. All you need, you don't even have to worry about the Senate. All you need is one brave senator, one senator willing to put their career on the line, and 41 abstentions.
Oh, wow.
Any funding bill is dead.
41 abstentions?
41 abstentions. That's all it is. So if
so they have, but they can't just be not present for the vote. They have to be there and abstain.
Yes. But how many times have senators abstained for one reason or another? That's standard. They do it all the time. Nobody ever complains. 41, that's the way for the Senate to do this without reaping the consequence. 41 abstentions, one brave senator. A bill dies. You don't have to worry about a presidential veto. There ain't none. It never even gets to his desk.
Right. True.
Bingo.
Why is it? We figure this stuff out, Susan. Why don't they?
Well, I didn't figure it out. Somebody at Counterpunch did.
Yeah, but I mean, it's out there. There are people who are reading the rules of procedure, and yet the people who are getting paid to know this stuff, you know, I'm sure Robert Byrd knows about this. But
when I put this on the blog, I added a note. I said, "Are you listening, Senator Wyden? Senator Boxer? Senator Kennedy?"
Yeah, one of these people who couldn't be voted out of office on a bet or a dare.
Yeah.
Precisely. And so it's over at the you've put all this on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com blog.
Yes, it's it was put up a fair amount of days ago. We've done quite a bit of blogging since then. We have a new news ninja, by the way. Her name is. She's the Texas News Ninja. Her name is Betsy.
Oh, yes. Wonderful.
And, the name of the post is How One Senator Could End the War. So if you just look for that, search for that, it'll pop up.
Okay, great. Well, Susan, it's so good to talk to you. I feel like I've been away a week. I guess I kind of have. But it's good to be back home and back behind my microphone and knowing that I don't sound, as one listener put it, you sound like you're talking over a string. So I'm back here where things are supposed. All is right with the universe almost. So yeah.
Yes, and all is right with the head-on listenership now that Brother Bob is back in the cathedral.
Thank you. Step on down for your magic cracker.
Yes.
You take
you
care,
do,
Susan.
And you have a nice evening, and reach on over and give Sister Agnes a gift for me.
I sure will. You take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, God, copper mines and explosives next to a volcano. Yeah, if you're like me and a certain age and a little bit older, you grew up watching those great 1950s science fiction movies, and there was one where they were going to do geothermal power, and they drilled through to the core of the Earth, and it was going to cause the Earth to explode. And I think that one terrified me more than any creatures coming out of swamps or, well, I don't know, I had some pretty significant nightmares over the colossal man. But these guys are really doing it. Hey, look, we can make some money. Yeah, but we might blow up a volcano. Think we'll have the money first? Yeah, let's throw it. Oh, Louie, you're begging for a pink slip. let's go. Let's keep on with the phone. Sarge is waiting. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing, Bob? It's good to have you back in West Virginia.
Thank you. Doing good. How about you?
Well, having you back in West Virginia brings a little bit of normalcy back to the world. To me, anyway, because I sure have missed you on the air, my friend.
Well, it's been a rough few days, but sometimes there are things that have to get prioritized and get done, and taking 2 tons of garbage for disposal was one of them, and that doesn't happen overnight. I had a whale of a lot of help from Agnes and from our producer Zach, who volunteered his time, and our good friend David joined in. And we got it all done, but boy, there's so much more to still be done. I tell you what, it's daunting.
Well, you know, that's when you was talking about recycling and you know, making use of your resources properly, that's something I wish we could learn here in this state. We just don't seem to get it, and then we turn around and we do things that just add to the problem, like we are not building up our barrier islands after Katrina. Instead, Trent Lott and Thad Cocker and them decided the way to do it was to have more offshore drilling and drill on those islands, which just destroys those islands even worse. And, I mean, you know, another Katrina-type storm, and before long you're going to have the Mississippi coast right up there in Stone County. Pearl River, Harrison, Hancock, and Jackson will just not exist anymore. It'll be underwater, but you can't tell these idiots that. You know, they don't want to hear it.
Well, the thing is, the processes are not necessarily immediate, Sarge. And so if these people, these faith-based people, among other things, who are willing to believe 92 dozen impossible things before breakfast but can't believe that they're actually damaging their own environment, if you could show it to them in the Bible where it said that would happen, you know, they'd be all over it.
I don't know. You can show them where Jesus said, if you have a neighbor that's hungry, you feed them. If you have someone in prison, you go visit them, you know, but not here. Forget that, man. You think I'm going in any prison? No, not these people, you know.
Well, they wouldn't be there unless they were bad people, Sarge.
Yeah, well, see,
and look, I mean, let's not be Pollyannas about it. There are some bad people in the prison system.
Yeah, there's some that's in the government that's bad.
And there's some that are walking free that need to be where we put the bad people.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes it's really hard to get anything done. I got, you know, Jordan, little girl that tried to commit suicide, and we've seen her picture, and we've seen that how she's getting along and all. Her dad is in in the detention center here in Columbia, where I am, and I found out that he had been there for a long time, for several months, and he didn't even have a PIN number. He couldn't even call his family in Jackson County. And they said the reason he didn't told his mother, the reason he didn't have it, was because they hadn't assigned a caseworker to him yet. And she told me that it was really causing a lot of problems because if something needed to be told to him, they couldn't contact him, he couldn't contact them, and it was just creating a major problem. So I called the warden, and I did manage to get that taken care of, so he does now have contact with his family. But I had to threaten him with a bad story to get him to do it, you know. And it's a shame when we don't care enough, even in our own community, to take care of things that should be taken care of. You know, a person goes into prison, they still have their rights to being treated decent. Of course, I know it's not Bush.
Well, that's the thing. Decent is a sliding scale, especially with the growing privatization of the prison industry.
Well, let me tell you, the latest on this area, and it's not good, Judy Coleman now has severe diabetes, and it is Katrina-related. The doctor told her that she was lucky that she realized that it was more than stress, because a lot of women on the Mississippi coast now have severe diabetes, and they don't know it because they think it's just from the stress of all that's going on. And so Judy was lucky that she was able to catch it, and the doctors are working with her to try and stabilize it. But the doctor said, you have a lot of company on this coast in this, but unfortunately, many of them have died, and many of them are going to die, and it's just not getting out. The hospitals are so full now that a man had a heart attack close to where Judy lived, and they took him to the Pascagoula Hospital, and they said, sorry, there's nothing we can do. We're overflowing, and there's just nothing, you know, there's no way to take care of him, so they sent him on to Mobile, which is pretty crowded from all the overflow from Mississippi, but they were able to stabilize him, and turned out he had had a massive heart attack. And of course, this isn't being told. I mean, you know, that's old news. You know, who cares about what's happening in Katrina land? But then we've got a lot of people here that have really bad diseases, and these diseases.
Oh, and this is, you know, this is just the front end of it, Sarge.
Yeah.
This isn't what it's going to be 5 years from now.
No, and here's what I'm trying to get everyone to wake up to, and I'm hoping maybe I can get back on Malloy in the next few days to tell him and make, you know, get him on the bully pulpit about it too. But we have diseases that are not being reported here, and they are severe diseases. Some of them are old diseases that's been under control for over 100 years, and they're pretty much gone. There's just a few cases of it before Katrina. These diseases are growing and growing, and they are on that.
Are we talking about things like typhus and typhoid and diphtheria and?
Yeah, and other things. I can't name you all of them because there's so many, and there's so much that's being covered up. But there's a lot of people dying, like in one area where they're going to do the 100 homes in 100 days. There is an extremely high number of people dying suddenly, and it's really disproportionate to any normalcy, and probably even disproportionate even to an area in such a condition as it's in. And so this is, you know, this is something that we're facing. In the meantime, Haley Barber's decided that he can't have Jim Yancey's organization, Jackson County Community Services Coalition, pulling this off, because if he builds 100 homes in 100 days, Haley Barbour hadn't built 100 homes in 19 months. So, you know, this is going to give the governor a black eye, and he just can't have that. So he's making it just as difficult as he can to block it. And, of course, if he blocks it, if he succeeds, it's just going to mean more death and destruction. And when these, now, thing about when these diseases get spreading, now, people are coming into the area, and they're working. They're coming from all over the United States. Okay, these people come in, and they leave the area, and if they have contracted one of these diseases, guess where it goes? It doesn't stay here in Mississippi. You know, it doesn't say, well, you know, I'm indigenous to this region, so I'll just stay here. You know, it's going back with the people that's working here, and pretty soon it's going to be spreading all over the United States.
Well, again, Sarge, we don't have, I mean, what, August will be, end of August will be 2 years. We haven't gotten the job done. The area is still suffering from all along the Gulf Coast, not just New Orleans.
Well, I'll tell you what.
We can't, you know, Anderson Cooper can't be there all the time.
That's right.
So it's easier to not talk about it.
Yeah. Well, now Steady stayed here a couple of days with me. And by the way, Jim Yassi just loves Steady. He said Steady was a godsend. Steady's really made a good impression on him. And I was like, you know, Steady's a good guy. But, we rode around Columbia where I live, and I'm like 85 miles from Gulfport, 96 miles from the Superdome. And we rode around the area, and we went in the rich part, and you didn't see a blue tarp in the whole place, you know. Everybody was had the roofs back and the yards fixed up and everything. Then as you move down the economic ladder, you started seeing blue tarps. Then as you get to the poorer sections, you see all blue tarps. So even here in this town, we still have a lot of stuff left over from Katrina that nobody's bothering with, and the rich people in this town don't give a damn. And it's not going to get taken care of because the people don't care. You know, they don't want to donate to a food drive. They don't want to donate to a rebuilding process. It's just we don't care. We are taken care of. We don't care about you. And it's really a sad situation, and Americans had better start paying attention to this and keep calling their congressmen and senators and demanding that this be brought to light, because it's going to turn into a national epidemic, because you can't control diseases moving on, and that's what's going to happen. If the hospitals are overflowing in Mississippi and they're causing one in Mobile to start overflowing, what's next? Birmingham will be overflowing. Jackson.
Pensacola.
You know, and pretty soon it'll be in Memphis. Then it'll be in West Virginia and Ohio and all this. So, you know, this is something Americans better stop and think about. This could actually overtake the country before we get out of Iraq. And we're just begging for it. And another major storm through this area, and I don't even want to think about that. It's just so horrible. So I'm just trying my hardest to make people realize this is a serious, serious national problem. It's not only a national disgrace and shame, but it's also just a disaster waiting to happen, even for the nation. So I don't know what we're going to do to get the people to pay attention. But
all we can do, Sarge, is keep talking.
Well, and thank God for people like Jim Yancey and Steady and all them that's doing such good work down there. And I hope Jim will be on the program again before long.
I think we'll probably hear from Steady on Monday with the kickoff of the 100 Homes in 100 Days, and maybe Jim as well.
I imagine Jim will. But I just, I just wanted people to be aware, because we really do have some serious, serious problems here, and they're not going to stay here. They're going to travel all over this country, and if we want to play ignorant, act like we don't know, like everything's fine, okay, go ahead. But your day is coming, and you're going to suffer through this, And when you do, remember, I said that there was a chance to stop it, but we didn't do it because we didn't want to be bothered. And so I asked everybody, please go to Jim's website, donate some money. If you can come down and help build homes, there's a way to do that at his website, because we need the help, we need the people, and if nothing else, if you don't do it for nothing else, come down just to give Haley Barbour a black eye and get rid of one Republican piece of garbage that needs to be in prison.
And Jim's website is jccsc.org, correct?
That is right.
All righty. Thank you so much. Sarge.
Bye-bye.
Take care. You know, Sarge mentions the fact that overflow cases are beginning to be seen coming out of Mississippi and moving elsewhere. It's worth mentioning in that line that, they may not be able to treat heart attacks or diseases, pneumonia, things like that. On the other hand, however, if you're pregnant, the right-wingers would like to make sure that you get an ultrasound of your, dime-sized the embryo. They can give you an ultrasound. They're going to make it law. They're trying to make it law in South Carolina. I got an email for you when we come back. This just blows my mind. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. This is America's liberal voice, and I'm Bob.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Isn't that? Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Got a confession to make. The way we worked this out, I found a list of Tony Bourdain's favorite music, and in conjunction with our good friend Billy Shears, we got some bumpers put together. So we've got Tony Bourdain's favorite bumper music going tonight, and according to him, the Ramones' "I Don't Want to Walk Around with You" is right up there with Shakespeare. And Agnes wants to dance. Darn right. Let's go to the phones. Peter joins us from Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. So that's how you pull that music up, because he was so impressed when he was just going on and on about the music when he called it. I was going, wow, this music is really different. You guys just really worked it tonight, didn't you? Huh?
Secret squirrel stuff, Peter. Secret squirrel.
Boy, there's no end to the deviousness. I just love you guys. Way to go. Well, yeah, I don't really have much tonight. I'm kind of sniffly and I have a cough, but I'm feeling a lot better. I was a little under the weather, but you know, everybody can count on Sarge to talk about what goes on the Gulf Coast, and everybody can count on me to start going on about the Bush Library. So I'm afraid it's one of those nights. You know, get your eyes picked out.
I just had an epiphany. We build the Bush Library on a swamp in the Gulf Coast.
Perfect. Yeah, in a low-lying area in the Fifth Ward. Is that where it's...
The Ninth, yeah.
Yeah, Ninth Ward, yeah. Well, you know, it looks like that's going to go through the board of the highly paid conservatives have approved the land and the whole bit. But what really has me upset today is a huge article in the... SMU Daily Campus News, SMU meaning the Southern Methodist
right.
University, and it's written entirely by the IRD, and as you know, I've been raging about the IRD now for a couple of years. You know, the Institute for Religion and Democracy is already completely, the Baptist Church is a wholly owned subsidiary of the IRD, completely taken over the Baptist Church, which is how they've gone all evil. And the Methodist Church, being the second largest Protestant congregation, they've been going after the Methodist Church now strongly for a number of years. And the IRD is, Institute for Religion and Democracy, is a very powerful think tank, well-connected, highly funded. The members are highly funded by people like the Mellon Camps, and there's a whole list of them. I don't have the article in front of me, but it goes on and on, and their primary focus is not to turn the church toward the good of the spreading the gospel of Christ, but toward the good of the government. And they clearly state that in their text. I have some articles on it buried somewhere, but in this article, they go after a man named Fred Candler, and he's a reverend who's been extremely upset by the IRD's connection with the United Methodist Church and their pressure on the Methodist Church to have the Bush Library, and the article goes on about how Candler opposes the library and how he's upset that the IRD's supportive of the SMU. And here, and it goes right into it, Bob. It goes, this is nothing new. The United Methodist Church elite, who were overwhelmingly liberal, have long resented the IRD. And it goes on to talk about how they're the good guys, and how the IRD was founded as an ecumenical think tank, which is a lie, in 1981 by the AFL-CIO. It talks about various laymen involved. But, you know, I'm sure that those were the front people, but that's not the case anymore. And they go on about how they were, you know, helping against human rights abuses in the Soviet bloc, and relating this all to how we need the Bush Library, which is nothing more than a cover story for his obscene legacy. And I'm just truly disgusted by it. The Methodist Church is well on its way to succumbing to this. The Methodist Church is so divided. Too, you know, on the West Coast, their congregations are extremely progressive and,
sane. Sane.
Yeah, a peace and justice oriented congregations. In the South, it's, you know, tends to be very conservative. But I can almost see a split coming in the Methodist Church over that issue. But you know, maybe not. It's hard to say. But I'm definitely going to have to resign my membership from the Methodist Church. I'm not going to stop attending the local congregation because I know everybody here, and it's kind of a family thing, and it's a little small community, and I love all the people. But I don't want my name associated with it, and I just want to encourage Methodists everywhere who understand and get what's going on. I'm not saying leave your churches where you grew up and leave all your friends and go out shopping for a new congregation or leaving the church altogether. I'm just saying take your name off the roll. You can go to that church every Sunday without being a member, and the Methodist Church doesn't require you to be a member to take communion or participate or even be a member to get married, for that matter.
It's not like the military or anything. They won't throw you out for...
Exactly.
There's no don't ask, don't tell policy in the United Methodist Church.
No, there's really no don't ask, don't tell policy.
God, this is embarrassing. Yeah, and maybe that's, I don't know. I don't know what history's ultimate verdict will be on the Bush administration, these 8 long, miserable, tortured, hate-filled years. But maybe part of that verdict, Peter, will be just plain common embarrassment.
I hope so.
They were an embarrassment to the ideals of the United States of America.
They certainly are.
They took every institution that meant anything whatsoever to the American people, whether it be their unions or their civic organizations or their churches, and did everything in their power to destroy them and rebuild them in their own image.
Yes, and as long as the IRD is in charge of these mainline Protestant churches, the divisions will continue. They'll continue to push the party line of the elite liberals and what the real core values are, which basically mean no abortion and no gay marriage and all the things that divide people, which really aren't issues at all if they were talked about and discussed. So it's their way of keeping the legacy. Yeah, they're going to keep that, 30% of the population, 33? What is the approval rating right now? Those have got to be Protestant.
29-ish? Yeah.
There have got to be Southern Baptists and some of the Methodist side.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, when you get down to that level, that's what you're talking about. Nobody in their right mind supports George W. Bush anymore.
Nobody.
Anybody who still supports the man has an obvious reason for doing so that is generally self-interested and related to a greater evil. Can we say that?
Well, yes, certainly. That the very, very rich who are completely self-absorbed and self-interested are the very, very uninformed and not exactly the brightest bulbs in the tree who follow.
Nobody wants a Charlie in the box. No, I'm sorry, that was just out there. But I mean, we have our fun, but there's truth in it, Peter.
There's a lot of truth.
What does the Southern Baptist Church get out of continuing to support George Bush?
I haven't a clue. It's a huge.
Well, they're getting money.
Well, there now.
How quickly we forget the purity balls.
Yeah, that too.
There's stuff that that just sort of hangs around in my brain. And I remember the, what was it, the $1 million that was given by the White House to an organization to not to do what they're doing, but to promote what they're doing with the snowflake babies. Oh, and guess what? It was a church.
Yeah, and how did that story go during Katrina? They sent, like, a boat that could have been saving.
Yeah, a boat with 3 Louisiana state troopers and 6 Illinois conservation officers to rescue some frozen embryos.
And who's under whose directive? Who the hell? I don't even know the rest of that story. How did that work? Who told them to do that?
Nobody. I mean, the money did. And of course, the mommy of the baby, the proud parents, just happened to be that, you know, the hubby was a state trooper.
Oh, that's how it all connected, no doubt. So they went to save mommy's embryos?
Yes.
Man, that's...
That mommy had paid good money to have fertilized.
Jesus.
You know, I hear you can do that. Well, I don't know. They're Republicans. Maybe they have to pay to fertilize embryos. Maybe Republicans can't reproduce in the wild anymore. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe
it's like pandas.
What?
Maybe it's like pandas. There have to be turkey basters and things like that involved.
Yeah, big old red Republican turkey basters. Ann Coulter over the bed.
Ah! Woo! Stop.
Oh, can I? No, please. No,
you made me make the limiter go crazy.
Okay. Okay. Well,
poor Agnes's eyes are burning, and she's clawing at her eyelids.
Yeah. Well, you know, the article goes on and on, and I'm not going to bore you with it, but they link themselves to, you know, helping the, you know, the movement, the Sandinistas, the Nicaragua, and, you know, it just goes on and on about how clear and pure they are, and it's the elite liberals. It's all their fault.
Liberals.
Yeah, the elite liberals.
They're elite. They're
elitist.
That's
how they do it. That's how they do it. There's just a grain of truth, but no real disclosure as to who they are, what their agenda are, or how they're linked, et cetera.
Yeah, where does the money come from?
Right, the money. So,
yeah, it's the, you know, the love, it's not money is the root of all evil. People forget about that. It's the love of money is the root of all evil.
And it really got me that they're saying that they were founded by the AFL-CIO, which is, of course, you know, to help the little guy, you know, and as if the elite liberals are the ones trying to stop anybody from having a union or progressing in any way.
Oh,
just
God.
It's so warped. It's just every... But if you didn't know these things, Bob, you would just read it and go,
Yep.
Oh, jeez. Anyway.
And nobody's there to call them on it.
Nobody.
Except, you know, us and you.
Well.
So, you know, the continued usefulness of the horn bears itself out again. It's the stuff that we don't talk, that doesn't get talked about, the stuff that... Well, I mean, you can tune in on, there are more programs now than there used to be, and they will do the hard news stories, and I'll do the so-called hard news stories, but it's the stuff that doesn't get out there that really, really bends your mind.
Yeah, and a lot of it.
We talked with the gentleman the other night on the Christian Peace Witness for Iraq.
Yeah.
And he was a Presbyterian.
Yeah.
And of course, that church, that congregation, that denomination has been rendered has been rend in two.
Oh yeah,
because it's worth remembering that hateful old freak D. James Kennedy down at Coral Snake Ministries, he's a Presbyterian.
I didn't realize. I just think of him as a devil.
Yeah, he's a devil. but he is, and you know the. I was reading, there's a great book out there by a guy named Sam Harris called The End of Faith. It's slow going through it because it's kind of pretty sturdy, dense material. But he points out, it's worth noting, the Roman Catholic Church to this day has never excommunicated Adolf Hitler.
Well, that's an interesting point.
Or Himmler, or Goebbels, or Goering.
Very interesting point. And you wonder the same thing about the Baptist Church and what's this crazy?
They ordained Fred Phelps.
There you go.
They haven't recalled their ordination.
Yeah.
You know, Sam Harris points out that they didn't excommunicate any of the perpetrators of the Holocaust. On the other hand, they did finally get around in 1992 to apologizing
for screwing over Galileo.
Oh, yeah, that was a little bit... Oh, yes, and you also remember they denied communion to Carey, wasn't it, Carey?
They insisted that John Carey couldn't get communion. And
boy, first things first, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we can't run around excommunicating good folks like Adolf Hitler.
No, of course not. No, you have to excommunicate Daddy Bush if you want to. Well, of course, no, he's not a Catholic.
Well, you know, they excommunicated George and Tony Blair there at the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem.
They did.
And I remember my little right-wingers in the audience back in the bad old terrestrial radio days going, well, he's a Methodist, it don't matter. You know, it does matter. Yeah, that's like saying the Mayan priests had no business going and spiritually cleansing the temple sites.
Wasn't that fabulous? Oh, I was in party mode over that. It was absolutely fabulous. I want to have them up here.
Just a general spiritual cleansing of all Bushness.
Mayans, anybody that will help, if they're not against us, they're with us.
That's kind of backwards, isn't it?
Well, as long as they're not sacrificing babies, I'm all for them.
Oh God! You know, there's about six dozen one-liners that could have followed that one. I'm very proud to say I didn't use any of them.
Yeah, well, you know. Oh man. So that's really all I know tonight, Bob. I'm just, you know, kind of, you know, cruising along. I'm just kind of...
You sound like you got a little bit of the spring sinus fun starting up.
Yeah, I do. The pollen is so thick here, you can write your name in it outside. It's everything is just really coated in it. We're in major springtime mode. There's the houses, but wisteria all over the place, and that stuff's full of pollen and azaleas and everything. It's just everywhere you look. You know, all I need is a gown ball and our ball gown. Just go out and wander them up.
Go swanning about in the garden.
With my julep.
You know, I saw juleps in a can in Alabama.
Oh, tell me, no.
I did.
That's horrifying. And you didn't buy one?
No, I did not. I think more of myself than that. Besides, I didn't have time to go and buy the pink flamingos for the yard. You know, one thing follows from another.
Well, I enjoyed talking to you, Bob. So glad you're back.
Oh, I'm so tickled to be back. There's so much work to be done, but it feels good to be back where I'm supposed to be.
Now, listen, did David get off, or is he still with you another day?
No, he took off, and, you know, what a general he is.
Is he really?
Oh yeah, his career was in packaging manufacture.
Yeah.
This guy knows from boxes.
I see.
And you know, we worship at his shrine. No, put it there. Burn this. Dump that.
Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, it was every. I wanted to put him on a hilltop and give him some binoculars. Yes, General.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you just have to have a guy like that. I mean, it's just required. And
well, when you're doing this kind of brutal stuff, it makes things a little bit easier.
Well, sure, especially if it's stuff that you have a personal connection to. You've got to have an independent thinker in there that's not a connected.
Yeah, throw it away. Haven't seen it in 5 years. You've forgotten it exists. Get rid of it.
Right. Yeah.
And so I'm well on the way to almost having one building empty and being able to put the other building into it.
Cool.
And then maybe the other building turns into the new Horn Studios. I don't know.
Well, that's great news. You know, we were working on a commune up there. We're all going to need a place to stay.
Darn right. And next up, plow the garden.
Cool. We need Danette for that. She'll know how to can everything.
Yes, indeed we do.
Yes, we do.
I just sent her the souse recipe.
We'll live on souse and love.
Peter, take care.
I'll see you later.
Bye now. Oh, Lord, souse and love. I'll take the love part. Leave me. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. I've had my my grandmother would make souse. And you don't have to have a hog's head to do it. I guess it's just more fun that way. Delicious stuff, though. So, you know, that's another hour. And it's another hour well spent. When we come back, I'm out of time. I do want to get to this story out of South Carolina that our friend David in South Carolina has sent. Mind-bending. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Subpoenas could be issued at any time for President Bush's top advisors, calling them to testify in the controversial firings of 8 federal prosecutors. A House panel today approved but did not issue those subpoenas. The authorization sets the stage for a potential constitutional showdown between the White House and Congress. Hoping to avoid what he called a media spectacle of public hearings, the president yesterday offered top aides for off-the-record interviews about the firings. The White House now says if subpoenas are issued, their offer will be withdrawn. On Capitol Hill, the Senate voted overwhelmingly to cancel the provision in the Patriot Act that permitted the Bush administration to unilaterally appoint U.S. attorneys without Senate confirmation. In Iran, a stern warning from the country's religious leader today, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, warned that if the country were attacked, it would hit back. The statement comes as Iran faces new UN Security Council sanctions over its failure to halt a uranium enrichment program. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's office tells CNN that a top aide to radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr has been freed from jail. He was detained in 2004 and no charges were brought against him. The agreement was reached in hopes that he can play a key role in moderating extremism and help reconcile the factions in Iraq. Iraq's vice president today called for talks with insurgent groups to help quell the violence in the country. Tariq al-Hashami told the BBC the militant groups are, quote, all part of the Iraqi communities. Excluding al-Qaeda, he said everyone should be invited to sit down and talk. Despite the expanding security crackdown in West Baghdad, at least 33 bodies were found dumped across the city today, all apparent victims of sectarian violence. And north of Baghdad, U.S. troops reportedly destroyed a bomb-making factory. Senate Democrats have come up with a $121.5 billion Iraq war spending bill. It would require President Bush to start bringing the troops back from Iraq in about a year. President Bush says he will veto any bill that would allow the District of Columbia a voice in the House. Congress is expected to vote Friday on a measure that would make Washington, D.C. a state. You're listening to Quality News Network. Science and Business, next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. CollaborativeDivorce.tv.
Pfizer's attempt at making needles a thing of the past for diabetes sufferers hasn't taken off. The company's inhalable form of insulin, Exubera, isn't selling as expected. Exubera does cost 11 to 22% more than injectable insulin.
The National Cancer Institute's released a study that links a high-fat diet with breast cancer. Scientists say the fat may stimulate hormone production, which increases the risk. And Chinese food is the latest to come under attack by the Center for Science in the Public Interest. The consumer group, known for its past critiques of restaurant foods, says Chinese dishes are filled with too many calories, fat, and salt. Colombia will ask the U.S. to extradite 8 people involved in the Chiquita banana scandal. Chiquita pleaded guilty this week in a U.S. courtroom to hiring the country's most notorious terrorist group for protection. And the Federal Reserve wrapped up a 2-day meeting today, leaving interest rates right where they are at 5.25%. The Fed's left the benchmark interest rate untouched over the last 6 meetings. Financial markets interpreted the move as a leaning toward lower rates in the future. Light sweet crude is trading at $59.61 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 159 points, the NASDAQ up 48, the S&P up 24. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then, 5.5 minutes after the hour, and we've got some conversing and cussing and discussing to do in this final hour. I did want to share a couple of things with you before we go back to the phones, though. I got an email from our good friend Billy Shears, who notes this just in, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed confesses to the Boston Strangler murders. It wasn't Tony Curtis after all. And it's my understanding that not only was he the Boston Strangler, he was the Hillside Strangler, the Night Stalker, the Tate LoBianco Killer, and Jack the Ripper. If we move forward in time, we'll find out that he was the creepy little dude played by the little bald dude that yelled, Regic, 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 through the computer system on Star Trek. Richard Ramirez, Squeaky Fromm, and Charlie Manson are said to be a little bit shocked. Jesus, this is... Like I said, talking to Peter... At the end, of, in the final analysis, yeah, there's outrage. There's horror. But there's also a whole bunch of just mind-bending embarrassment. Oh, that's the second time I've used that phrase. That must be my phrase of the night. Sorry. But I also mentioned an email that we got from our good friend David in South Carolina. Down in South Carolina way, right-wing Republican lawmakers, dig this. It's not exactly, you know, fresh. They're still at it. But they're proposing an ultrasound, a mandatory ultrasound, for any woman considering an abortion. Now, South Carolina does not have the best health care system on earth. They don't have the 105th best health care system on earth. They don't offer any insurance to their worker to the working class folks who don't have it otherwise, but a woman who may be pregnant could be forced by the South Carolina legislature to get an ultrasound of her embryo or her fetus at whatever stage of development it is. Because the state of South Carolina has made a determination that women are too damn dumb to figure out what is best for them and their bodies. And, of course, there's a guy out there running around with a mobile ultrasound lab. By the way, we have figured out that a whole bunch of ultrasounds aren't good for fetuses. So to the extent that a mother who decides to carry her baby to term will probably have to have one in, what, Agnes, the 16th week? That's about when they recommend it. for reasonable medical, considerations. Well, now she's going to have two. And of course, the other thing in here that I find fascinating is having availed myself a little bit of this story, something sort of kept picking at the back of my brain. It was one of those something's missing here sort of things. If you go, for instance, and you donate blood to the Red Cross, and it turns out you have HIV, or it turns out you have hepatitis A, B, or C, they will quietly and anonymously notify you of it. So a woman who thinks she's pregnant but turns out to have an ectopic pregnancy, those of you who are either not women or not necessarily medically inclined may, as I didn't used to know, what an ectopic pregnancy was. It's where the egg doesn't get... Tell me if I'm getting any of this wrong, Agnes. It's where the egg doesn't make the full ride down the fallopian tube to attach to the uterine wall and instead becomes an embryo inside the fallopian tube and can kill you, madam, dead. There is not a blessed thing in here that says that Mr. Pro-Life with the wandering ultrasound machine guy has to tell you if it's an ectopic pregnancy. Because, you see, there's no way to fetus snowflake rescue an ectopic pregnancy. We're talking about a fallopian tube here. I mean, Not even the diameter of a drinking straw, right, Agnes? That's right. Very not even like the diameter of one of those little coffee stirring straws. So the embryo gets much big at all, it pops. And a woman frequently dies, and there's not a word in here that suggests that there is any mandatory requirement that they inform the woman of anything like that. Ma'am, here's the ultrasound of your fetus, and hey, it's got two heads. Now you want to be part of the culture of life, don't you? You got to birth that baby. Madam, there's an embryo growing in your fallopian tube, and it's going to kill you. No requirement for that, because you see, the guy, and part of this comes from our friend David in South Carolina. The other part of it comes from another one of these right-wing interview pitches that I keep getting from any number of places. And I never take their guests, and they keep pitching them to me. Commenting on this matter is Chris Slattery, the director of Expectant Mother Care, EMC Frontline Pregnancy Centers, New York's largest chain of crisis pregnancy. It's a chain! It's just like Walmart! Jeebus. Slattery, who is all for the new law, routinely drives and parks his mobile ultrasound van right by abortion clinics to show women pictures of their babies with the hope that they might reconsider their choice. Mr. Snellbaker, what is this? Reconsider their choice to abortion? I'm going to hit my head in the microphone in a minute. This guy is not even necessarily a licensed ultrasound tech. He is not allowed to give diagnoses. For all you know, he could be showing the lady her kneecap. It's a baby! And yet the geniuses in South Carolina think, we could have one of these on every, the Walmart on one corner and the emergency mother care. There's no mother care going on here. It's pornography. So anyway, our good friend David writes in from Florence, South Carolina. And he says, this should be required only if anyone who enlists in the armed forces is required to watch videos of innocent people being destroyed by senseless violence. This
is what my state taxes fund. Lawmakers rejected amendments that would have exempted victims of rape and incest. No, we want them to look at their little rape and incest babies, too, because they're babies that are created in God's image. In this case, it just happens to be that God is the image of a rapist. Or Uncle Daddy. But then again, God did come down and rape a little Jewish girl named Mary. Well, you know, it's prayer meeting night, so what the heck. 14 and a half minutes after the hour, and we go to the phones. Luke joins us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How's it going?
Well, let's see. Bring any fire ants back with you?
No, I tried really hard not to. They were, you know, they asked, but I said no, and I tried. No palmetto bugs either.
I tell you what, I had to go to my brother at one time was stationed in Montgomery. That's the first thing I said. Make sure you check yourself when you get in the car.
Yeah, no kidding. Don't take them north. You know, I did see something that was really weird. You know, I grew up down there. I paid attention to nature. I went fishing in the fishing holes and swimming in the swimming holes and stuff, Luke. All those years growing up, I never saw an armadillo in Florence, Alabama. Now, Florence is 30 miles from the Mississippi line and 11 miles from the Tennessee line. It ain't exactly tropical.
Yep.
But
you
we did
with a bad sense of direction.
Well, no, they're just there now. You know, possums on the half shell. There are armadillos in places where armadillos aren't supposed to be.
Well, you know how it is. It's like, say, the last 20 years, the way the temperature's been going up, they don't know the difference.
No, it's all home to them.
They ain't getting no winter or nothing to speak of as though we used to get a winter. So.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Oh, I saw the thing today. Somebody had a thing said, well, let's see. It was 35 years ago, we had 18 missing minutes of tape. Now we have 18 missing days of emails.
Isn't that the truth?
Said, isn't it amazing that between, what was it, mid-November and early December, on that whole document dump, there are no emails from that period. Isn't that incredible? Just at the time since they fired all the attorneys, I think it was on the December the 7th.
Now, it all makes perfect sense, Luke.
Yeah.
What it was is because of the Bush budget deficit, the Bush administration was unable to pay its AOL bill, and you know how they are.
Cut you off without a thought. You know,
right.
They're right. They're mean about that. The one I'm loving now on this thing, though, is the Carol Lamb out in California. And it turns out the thing that got her into trouble wasn't going as much after Duke, the Dukester.
Morning, Mr. Cunningham. Yeah.
Was apparently the fellow that was paying the Dukester, this contractor. And you've heard about the $140,000.
I'm a little out of the loop. Help me.
All right. I heard this the other day. I think it was on Tom Hartman. He was talking about, said there's $140,000 that this guy got a payment from Dick Cheney's office a couple of weeks before he bought the Dukester, his yacht.
His yacht, yeah.
And for how much?
140 large?
Yay. Isn't that incredible? Just a wonderful coincidence.
We live in a world of coincidences, Luke.
And apparently that Mrs. Lamb out there, that was her next case. She was going after, I think, Representative Lewis out there. But the other person she was going after was this contractor. And amazingly enough, some people think that if she got hold of the contractor, it was going to lead to a whole bunch of interesting places, right up to Dick Cheney's front door, maybe.
No, we can't have that.
We work over on the dark side. I've turned the lights out now.
You can't have federal prosecutors come visiting at the Naval Observatory. I just want to look at the stars, Mr. Vice President.
Well, somebody put it the other day. I was listening to it. Said, you know, the question is may not be what got the eight attorneys fired, but what did the other 86 or whatever it is have to do to keep their jobs?
You know, there's a...
Who did they go after so they could prove they were a loyal Bushy?
Well, where did I see the stats the other day? That what 79% more prosecutions have been of Democrats than of Republicans.
Yep. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things that I could get in an amazing coincidence. Once again, strike. Lordy B. Oh, you may have been traveling, so you may have to go over to News Hounds to see it. But last night, Mayor Rocky Anderson visited Villo.
Oh, really? What, did they give a, did, you know, did Hannity bail out, or?
Well, no. This isn't this. He had him on the show. Apparently, you know, Rocky's been out there pushing, talking about they want to impeach, amazingly enough, W, for some strange reason.
Yeah, who, go figure.
So he had him on the show for like the first 10 minutes, apparently, last night. And over at Newshounds, they've got some of the stuff, and apparently Rocky held his ground. You know, didn't let Philo push him around. And I was reading something the other day. Somebody was on, what was the lady's name? I think I sent an email. Susanna or Suzanne.
Oh, yeah. Sansara Taylor.
I can't remember. I just remember, you know, the name. It was kind of an odd spelling of it.
Yeah, Sansara Taylor. She's been on this show
I'm sorry.
Yeah, from World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And was talking about the fact that she got on there apparently the other night and apparently almost ripped Bill O a new one. And then apparently the rest of the show, Bill O sat there and after she'd gone and Bill O sat there and just trashed her the rest of the show.
Well, that's because he's a big, bold, strong, conservative man.
Oh, I tell you what. And have you been? I sent you the thing about Sean.
Yeah.
The debate. He's challenged Rocky, or Rocky's challenged him to, or whatever it is. And basically enough, Sean keeps putting up these conditions.
Yeah, we'll do it in the rain. We'll do it in a box. We'll do it with a fox.
Well, it was sort of the thing like with Rove and Myers. Yeah, we'll do it, but no one can tape it other than I people, and only I have control of it.
And if you, and, yeah, and if
but that's about it.
Yeah, and if you beat my butt like a I'm a baby, we don't have to let anybody see it, and it can't go up on YouTube.
Uh huh. So I mean, that was just interesting. Oh, did you see the thing today? I saw, I guess it was Ed Henry from CNN. They caught Tony in something today that was funny. I think it's at the gaggle or whatever they call that thing.
Right.
Said that apparently Tony comes out there and says, well, President Bush didn't have anything at all to talk, you know, about Mr. Gonzalez and all this with. So I think Ed Henry said, well, then in that case, then that means executive privilege doesn't really count, does it? Since he didn't talk to him about it, where can he invoke executive privilege?
Well, the other side of that story, too, Luke, is that somebody out there did the statistics. I found it at Pensito Review. Clinton aides going all the way to the very top testified in Congress under oath 47 times, 31 different aides.
Well, my favorite one on that always had to be, I mean, think of it. We had a Congress in the 90s who investigated Bill Clinton's Christmas card list.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, they spent like 6 weeks investigating his Christmas card list. You know, when you see something like that, you're just kind of going,
Dye. Yeah, but see, Luke, this takes me in two separate directions. This makes me of two minds. On the one hand, we know what the Bush Christmas card list looks like, sure. But, you know, dear oil company executive, fill in name here. But the other side of it is the Republican Congress was absolutely rabid to go over every last stitch and detail of the Clinton administration when the Clinton administration wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the Bush administration is doing something.
And for 6 years, we didn't have one investigation.
Not one investigation, and yet, and now with the Democrats in power, there are still those who say, well, you know, we don't want to be like the Republicans. Well, you're not being like the Republicans. You're doing your job.
Well, I tell you what, I heard the other day, Larry Johnson, and he was talking about, if you get a chance, you need to go over to his place, you know, where he does his blogging.
Mm-hmm.
He had some wonderful things about the Valerie Plame thing. It was just hilarious. He essentially tore Miss Tensing a new one.
Had that one coming.
Oh, I tell you what. But like I say, you ought to go over and read his blog. It was hilarious. But, you know, it's one of these things where he was talking about, lost my train for a second. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
But, you know, he was talking about the way that some of these people in power have no clue what they're talking about. You know what I mean? He's talking about Tensing. Said she's, as far as he knows, she's never been briefed by the CIA. You just sat there and you read a statement by the director of the CIA said that Valerie Plame was covert. Said there's like three ways you can be listed as covert. And apparently in the director's statement, he said she qualified under all three. And then they have Victoria Tensing and him come up here and essentially say, well, in a loose sort of way, she might have been. And then they had the thing, they were talking about Hannity and Human, all these people saying, well, she was, you know, when she filled out stuff during the year, she used the cover story, used the name of Brewster Jennings when she filled out things. And how could she do that? And he's sitting there and he's going, it's a cover identity. You don't say, I work for Brewster Jennings, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, a real company.
Right.
It's like when you're undercover, you
well,
don't
this
tell
seems
odd. That's
it,
the idea.
It seems entirely obvious to me that... And obvious to all of us, Luke, what was done. And what was done... Now, this is not by any stretch of the imagination a defense of the CIA, the FBI, the NSA. A lot of what they do is really, really dirty and sleazy. But we, you know, there's that whole nation of laws and not of men thing. And if you've got a law that says you don't out covert operatives, and the covert operative gets out, it seems like to me the indictment should be a no-brainer.
Or at the very least, since we're doing this to people across the country or across the world, I think one or two people maybe ought to just kind of, whoops, where'd he go? I don't know. He's been sent someplace. Wonder where.
Yeah.
Or we just ought to say, CIA, you all handle it. What was the old line in one of the movies that was the CIA still give good heart attacks?
Well, you know, what's his name, the evil old man who was running it back in the Reagan administration, he found out they give good brain hemorrhages.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, say, well, we found out the...
Getting ready to go...
They figured out how to do it. Was it polonium? Oh, yes.
Right.
Amazing how that just happened to he just happened to be the one to end up eating it, apparently. Like, isn't that incredible? A one in a trillion accident.
Yeah, never mind. Now, bear in mind, of course, there are polonium isotopes banging all over the British Isles now, but and in a trail leading straight back to Russia, you know, through France, through Germany.
Well, I say, we apparently know what George saw when he looked into Pooty Poot's soul.
Yeah, glow.
Somebody with a gun with a silencer attached.
Yeah, glow-in-the-dark soul, too.
Oh, God, I tell you what, it's just been amazing on some of this stuff, you know, this last little bit. You're just kind of sitting there going... Oh, I know what it was. Larry Johnson was talking a minute ago. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. Train.
Larry Johnson was talking about the fact, he said, you know, said this thing where they're claiming, you know, that, well, you know, the bipartisan report says Joe Wilson didn't do such and such. And they said, that's a three addendum put in by three Republican senators where that comes from. But Larry Johnson was saying, yeah, but the problem is the Democrats didn't squawk at it. You know, when they had the chance, they could have screamed and hollered, but they didn't. They might have still lost. But he said, nobody was standing up saying this is wrong. And he said when you've got the chance, said don't think I'm going to hold it off and do this later when it's better. No, do it now. We've learned that lesson. You know, it's like we said. You know, somebody said one time about turning the other cheek. Said, well, we learned about that. You turn that, they'll slap that one too. Said we've learned about that about the, you know, people, you know, the thing with Obama where people have said, you know, Obama wants to, you know, be good and nice about this, turn the other cheek, and it's like we've been through 6 years of that. That don't wash. It's one of those things. It's like, say, I'm sorry, but, you know, if we catch somebody doing something, we ain't going to just let this go. No, we follow this out to the end. It's like this thing with the U.S. attorneys. Nobody should let this thing go. They ought to follow this thing from one end to the other to, let, you know, turn over every rock. Let's get them all out there where we can see it.
Well, you know what this is, of course. It's being described as a... I hate them for it, Luke. I hate them. It's being described now as, you know, the Congress is going to force a constitutional crisis.
Good.
Well, who says? It's not a constitutional crisis. It's a constitutional system of government working the way a constitutional system of government is supposed to work.
And it's like, say, and the thing of it is, If they want to keep that going, you keep pushing that, Republicans, because the place this thing is going to leap back to is Richard Nixon. But you want to see who this compares to best of all? His name was Richard Milhouse Nixon.
And you know, and the Bush administration knows. You know, this is a game of falling back into previously dug trenches.
Well, and they're trying to scare them, and it's like, don't let them scare you. Just keep pushing right at them. You know, well, you know, it's like this thing. Well, we're going to say you all are unpatriotic. It's like, I'm over that. You know what I mean? It's like, go ahead and say what you want to. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to follow the Constitution.
And of course, they know they know that they wind up in the D.C. In the D.C. federal court.
Yeah.
And they know that the D.C. Circuit has none other than that inveterate scumbag David Sentell sitting there waiting to punt it and force the appeal to the and tell Congress they lose and send the appeal up to basically the
Scalia 5.
Yeah, well, the Bush family ultimate rubber stamp.
I tell you what, I'm going to head off here. I heard you earlier. You were talking about the Bush Library with somebody.
Yeah, with Peter. Yeah.
When you come to the door, do they hand out the crayons then, or do they wait till you get inside?
You know, and they got matchbooks at the counter that says "Draw the Pirate, Win an Art Scholarship."
I go where you draw the Bambi.
Yeah.
The whole thing like that. Well, like I say, I've just been sitting enjoying this thing today, just watching Mr. Gore. It's just so nice watching Mr. Inhofe.
Oh, yeah, Inhofe lost his mind.
Well, Barbara Boxer was just so fun.
There's
a clip you'll see tonight. You'll enjoy it just so much.
Oh, good, good. And it's worth noting that these people have come to the end of their ropes. You know, what's his name, Barton guy, actually used the word evolving to describe the global warming debate. I didn't think these right wing Republicans were allowed to use words like that, Luke.
I thought they, I thought that was up there with Carlin's 7 words you can't use. You know?
Exactly. Hey, Luke, you take it easy. Good to talk to you again.
I hope you have an enjoyable weekend.
I'm gonna try. It ain't here yet.
Well, are you all still in the tournament?
Yes, we are. What a game last night! Played North Carolina State,
okay,
in Morgantown, and the last 5 minutes were just cardiac. People, just guys running down to the other end of the floor, 5 feet, you know, at the NBA arc and beyond, and just draining these things that didn't even touch the rim. Oh, it was exciting! And the Mountaineers go on to play Mississippi State.
Okay, well,
in New York.
Our guys play tomorrow night, get to play Ohio State.
Well, your guys play tomorrow night, and then, of course, Memphis also plays.
Uh-huh. Like I say, this could be interesting if we get to the Elite Eight. We'll just have to wait and see. Our big question is, they've got their big man Odom, but the question is, if we play the press, can we keep him moving where he can't set up under the backboard?
Well, that's the key. And Odom is a whale of a basketball player.
But he can get in foul trouble real easy. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Luke.
Bye.
Bye now. Okay, break coming, then we come back to the phones. This is a lot of fun. I miss this one. I miss this when I have to be away from the microphone. A few minutes left. If you want to wedge in a few last comments, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. This is The Horn. This is America's liberal voice. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
I just don't know where to begin. Okay, well, I like the way you look at me with those beautiful eyes. I like the way you act all surprised. I like the way you sing along. I like the way you always get it wrong. I like the way you clap your hands. I like the way you love to
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Twenty-three minutes before the hour as we wind down. I'm going right back to the phones in a second. I want to share something with you real quickly, though. I told you I've been reading this marvelous, marvelous book, Rubicon, by Tom Holland. It's about the last days of the Roman Republic. Oh, God, there he goes again, off into ancient history. Well, see, that's the thing. Sometimes it matters. This dumbass, the Barton from Texas, climate change science is evolving. We don't believe you, Mr. Gore, because you're just trying to sell a movie. And Jim Inhofe, who just, you know, should be taken babbling away to an asylum somewhere, you know, so where he won't hurt anybody and he can write on the walls with a purple crayon on his toes. This is from Rubicon. And it's talking about it's a discussion of the economic impact of the rise of the Roman Republic and growing Roman power in the last 2 centuries before the Common Era. And he writes of Rome, as her grip tightened, so the very appearance of her provinces began to alter, as though giant fingers were gouging deep into the landscape. In the east, great cities were ransacked for treasure, but in the west it was the earth.
The result was mining on a scale not to be witnessed again until the Industrial Revolution. Nowhere was the devastation more spectacular than in Spain. Observer after observer bore stunned witness to what they saw. Even in far-off Judea, people, quote, had heard what the Romans had done in the country of Spain for the winning of the silver and the gold which is there. The mines that Rome had annexed from Carthage more than a century previously had been handed over to the Publicani. Those were tax farmers, private sector tax farmers. It would be as if we turned the IRS over to private entities. Wait a minute, we kind of did. Who had proceeded to exploit them with their customary gusto. A single network of tunnels might spread for more than 100 square miles and provide upwards of 40,000 slaves with a living death. Over the pockmarked landscape, there would invariably hang a pall of smog, belched out from the smelting furnaces through giant chimneys, and so heavy with chemicals that it burned the naked skin and turned it white. Birds would die if they flew through the fumes. As Roman power spread, the gas clouds were never far behind. Initially, large areas of Spain had been regarded as too remote and dangerous to exploit, the haunt of tribesmen so irredeemably savage that they believed banditry to be an honorable profession and used urine to brush their teeth. I'll be damned. The ancestors of the Bush family. By the last years of the 2nd century B.C., however, all except the north of the peninsula had been opened up for business. Huge new mines were sunk across central and southwestern Spain. Now, this is the part we were getting to. You had to have this part to understand what it was. Measurements of lead in the ice of Greenland's glaciers, which show a staggering increase in concentration during this period, bear witness to the volumes of poisonous smoke the mines belched out. The ore being smelted was silver. It has been estimated that for every ton of silver extracted, over 10,000 tons of rock had to be quarried. It has also been estimated that by the early 1st century BC, the Roman mint was using 50 tons of silver each year. Measurements of lead in the ice of Greenland's glaciers, which show a staggering increase in concentration during this period, bear witness to the volumes of poisonous smoke the mines belched out. That's just the Romans. That's just on the Iberian Peninsula. And it finds its way into the ice of Greenland, and it is at toxic levels. Meanwhile, the Republicans, the right-wingers, the conservatives say things like, well, my friends, there's no way of knowing, there's no way of proving, because we've never had any evidence. You know, our climatology only goes back to the beginnings of the 20th century. We have no idea whether or not human beings can really impact the climate of the entire planet. You lying jerks. It can be done. It has been done. Imagine what the Romans were doing, a million times greater or more. Back then, it just found its way into the Greenland glaciation. Now, Greenland's glaciers are going away. And Congressman Barton says, yeah, climate science is evolving. Yeah, Congressman Barton, of course you're an excellent driver. Drive slow on the driveway. Of course those aren't your underwear. Climate science is evolving. Wapner comes on at 3. Definitely Judge Wapner. Let's go to the phones. Gerard is calling from Indiana. Hey, Gerard, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob, it's good to hear you. Just want to touch on a couple things quickly. Really enjoyed your interview guest earlier. Kind of brought me back. I had some nostalgic moments there because one of my in my I spent about 20 years working in the restaurant business. And one of my first jobs was in a restaurant that happened to be, it's kind of a tourist trap, but on one of the piers in San Francisco Bay. And it was kind of from a skinny little 21-year-old white kid from the Midwest. It was quite an education because the guy who was the head chef was German. They had three sous chefs, two of which were Samoan, one was Korean. And all the people who were in the dishwashing department were all from South America. And the Korean sous chef was in charge of all the dishwashing people and communicated with them somehow without speaking their language. And we all just learned how to get along, you know?
Yeah.
because we had a job to do. And he's absolutely right. It is hard work. And, you know, the kind of people he was talking about, which come in to a restaurant and work their way up from being a dishwasher, and I have nothing but admiration for those people because it is hard work.
And they are hard workers.
Yeah, and they are there, like you say, day in, day out, and they just want to do a good job and care for their families. And I, you know, where I live here a couple weeks ago, we had another one of those raids where they rounded up a bunch of illegal immigrants. And I just, the more this issue goes on, the more I come to realize that they're going after the wrong people. And it's just, there's no, to me, as far as the Republicans are concerned, it is nothing but more fear-mongering and more political grandstanding. Back before the November election, I remember seeing Barney Frank was on Real Time with Bill Maher, and apparently at that time there was a Republican-sponsored bill going through Congress where they want to build this fence at the Mexican border. Well, the specifics of the bill were they're going to build a 700-mile fence. According to Barney Frank, they were going to build a 700-mile fence along what is the border in along the southern border, about 2,500 miles, something like that.
Yeah.
And
the Chinese are laughing at us.
Yeah, they want to build a 700-mile fence, and they only want to halfway fund it. So anybody who, you know, is able to read behind the line, between the lines a little bit, is going to say, well, you know, obviously, this isn't that much of a priority. I mean, it's just the wrong answer, you know?
Yeah.
And so what else could it be but more fear-mongering so that to scare the American people into thinking, well, I guess we better keep these Republicans in office because, after all, they're one of the ones who's protecting us from all the terrorists. And, I mean, I can remember seeing Newt Gingrich on CNN, you know, and he's making this long, convoluted connection between illegal immigration and crime syndicates, you know, that are tied in with terrorists coming up, you know, and the Minutemen on the border and all that stuff. You know, it's like they want us to live in fear to keep them in power. You know, I think there probably are significant individual cases of, you know, there's criminality and all that, and I understand that. But by and large, rounding up hordes of people who are just trying to make a living is not the answer.
No, and again, it's a complete. It's a violation, Gerard, of everything that we say that America's supposed to stand for.
Exactly.
Yeah, go round up working people. That's been the answer from the first time that working people ever tried to stand up on their hind legs and fight back.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we've gotten a little bit more, I suppose, sophisticated. We don't do what we used to do and just, you know, gun them down.
Right.
But that's not to say that some of these people wouldn't like to. But as Tony Bourdain noted, you round up all the illegals and the restaurant industry shuts down.
Certainly. Absolutely.
And the thing is, I know that where Tony is involved, they pay competitive wages.
Sure.
And you know, you can do okay when you move up to line chef and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's hard work, it's brutal work, it's weird ass hours.
Yeah, you got to be dedicated. That's why, like he was talking about, you know, these people that come out of a culinary school and think they're going to be the next Emerald or Rachel Ray, and all it is, you know, moving that little piece of parsley on the plate to make it look more.
Well, see, I did.
Aesthetic.
I was trying to be a nice guy, Gerard. I didn't mention Emerald, and when he mentioned Tony's come off of it a little bit, and he's being deliberately decent to Emerald because Emerald did work hard.
Yeah.
In his book Kitchen Confidential, he refers to Emerald as the Ewok. But you know, I deliberately didn't mention Rachel Ray.
Yeah.
Because I was afraid there would just be paroxysms of because he despises her. How cool is that? some Evie. Oh, yeah. The woman just drives me nuts.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
But you know, but no, it doesn't happen like that. Most of the people working this stuff, they work long hours. They go home. They get up. They come do it again. In this essay in this book, The Nasty Bits, he points out, you know, the work ethic matters.
Yeah.
You know, he says, I got it right here, Gerard. Who do you want in your kitchen when push comes to shove and you're in danger of falling in the weeds and the orders are pouring in and the number one oven just went down and the host just sat a 12 top and there's a bad case of the flu that's been tearing through the staff like the Vandals through Rome? You want an educated, CIA-trained American know-it-all like I was early in my career? A guy who's going to sulk if you speak harshly to him? A guy who's certain there's a job waiting for him somewhere? Dude, maybe like Ospenmon or the Keys, I can cook and maybe hit the slopes on my days off or the beach. And he said, or do you want somebody who's come up the hard way, a guy who started at the bottom, worked his way up, educated himself step by step, station by station, in the intricacies of your particular operation, who knows where everything is in every corner of your restaurant, who has been shown again and again until it's imprinted in his cell structure the way you want it cooked? He may not know what a sous vide is, but he can sure make one. He may not know the term Monte Aubert or know who Vatel was, but who cares? Vatel punked out over a late fish delivery and offed himself like a bad poet.
Yeah.
Somebody had to cover his station the next day. Manuel would have shrugged and soldiered on. No shrieking and wailing and rending of garments for Manuel. He's a professional, not some flighty artiste who can't handle a little pressure.
Yeah.
The guy's writing is beautiful.
Yeah, and he's right on. I mean, that's just the way it is, you know.
You can't walk out in the dining room and say, we're not bringing your food tonight.
Yeah.
The pastry chef is in a snit.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the whole aura around some of these chefs that are you know, like little tyrants. Some of that, I mean, everybody's got personalities you got to work with, but some of that is exactly because of that and because of the stress that you're under, because your name's on the line. And, you know, if you want to be proud of your work and, you know, certain things have to happen and they have to happen a certain way. And you can't, there's no room for, Madonnas, you know, prima donnas.
Divas.
So I really did appreciate you having them on. Real quickly, the other thing I just wanted to get into a little bit, heard on NPR today, it was kind of interesting, talking about Al Gore going before Congress, it was a story covering, the town meetings that are being held in New Hampshire and Vermont, and the coincidence of how many town meetings, I think the report was about 200, a little over 200, or like 202 town meetings that have passed resolutions to to get the federal government to address global warming. I think 192 of those resolutions have passed, and which is almost the same number that have passed resolutions to impeach Bush. I just thought that was a real neat parallelism.
Yeah, it is.
Right there.
And it did.
You know, it's funny. Even on NPR, they had their some government think tank talking head on there talking about, and he was saying things like, well, you know, these organizations that go in there and work with these at these town meetings are just political grandstanding, you know, and these are non-binding resolutions. They really don't mean anything. And these town meetings are meant to be things that discuss the town's business. And not to address these national issues. Well, does this guy think that these towns exist in a vacuum? I mean, even in a state where I live, where we don't have town meetings and don't have that kind of structure, I mean, the things that the federal government does and addresses itself to affect the local government here.
Sure.
You know,
and when some kid that the town has loved for 18 years and saw reflected in him or her its very future gets blown to bits in a stupid war, that becomes the town's business. At least by my lights, it does.
Yeah.
Well, Gerard, so good to hear from you. Thank you very kindly, and I hope we'll hear from you soon.
I'll be calling back, Bob. Don't you worry.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye now. A restaurant veteran who can speak to the truth of Tony Bourdain's words. Many thanks to Tony Bourdain for joining us tonight. I'm just a very, very... I don't think I qualify as a fish. I'm like, you know, something, you know... The pond is very large, and I'm very, very tiny, and he took time to have a conversation with us, and I appreciate it. A lot of people are getting to where they like to have conversations here, because what I hear more than anything else is, you know, we didn't have to stop for commercials. We had, you know, we talked freeform. We went where the conversation flowed, and yeah, I was a little bit fannish. I apologize, but I can't. I'll never be Mike Wallace. No, tell me. No, I can't do that. Somebody takes the time to come on here, whether they're a scheduled guest or a caller to the program. Everybody's equal, and this is the only place that happens, and I do mean the only place, the Head On Radio Network. It makes me proud, and I'm proud to be back, and I'm proud to be with you guys again, because you make it all worthwhile. The show tonight was produced, and the first time I've gotten to say this in a long time, within her ear and eyeshot, by my lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes. It was engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on the Horn. He's got a fundraiser going on. Need you to step up and do the right thing. When it comes to stepping up and doing the right thing, we're still putting together the 60 people that we need to do $10 a month to keep Guy James on the air. If you can forego one movie a month, you can keep a voice as important as Guy's going. Who's more important, Guy James or the latest action thriller that you're going to walk out of the theater going, well, there's $7 I'll never have again, and two hours of my life gone to go watch a Xerxes the King of Persia portrayed as a guy with a piercing fetish? Yeah, 300. So please do that. Do the right thing. Many thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida. We have wonderful news ninjas, Gene, Susan, and newly minted news ninja Betsy. Many thanks to our moderators in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. They make it a fun place to hang out and listen to the Horn programming. If you've never gone, go by. It's free, it's easy, and it's fun. Many thanks to the thousands of members of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters.
who get up every day and go out and build the American dream, and by supporting this network, help to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Cheney heads to hospital for examination. Mastermind of USS Cole attack confesses. Senate okays limits on Gonzalez's authority. Bush affirms support for Gonzalez, but Gonzalez's hold on job grows uncertain. Australian detainee writes of beatings at Guantanamo. Lawmakers threaten FBI over spy powers. Patience for Iraq war is waning, says leaders. Rice warns against Iranian missile threats. Russia gives Iran ultimatum on enrichment. London is the world capital of the 21st century, says New York. Court probes limits on student speech. Taiwan to test defenses against China in a live fire drill. GOP candidates confront immigration policies. Obama more liberal than Kucinich analysis reveals. Is popular YouTube ad big trouble for Hillary? Schwarzenegger calls Rush Limbaugh irrelevant. KSM, is he the ultimate patsy and he confesses? These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.